like everyone else. You will always be remembered, even life itself. Say it to me, Santo, to try to make it fine. Say it to me, Santo, in normal moving time. Say it to me, Santo, it's off the world is so. Say it to me, Santo.
Everybody, we are live.
Marco, where are you right now?
I am currently not in a vehicle. I am back at my house in my usual recording environment. But I have to say that now.
Yeah, that's true.
I will say, though, I actually I have something that makes me a little uncomfortable to report to you at this moment.
Now I'm uncomfortable. I don't know if I want to.
There's no water in my closet.
No, yeah, right. No, there's 5 gallons. No. Different closet on the floor. But no, I actually have been, for the last day or so, kind of enjoying the fine woven case.
You know, I don't have a problem with that. I would say I actively disliked it, but it wasn't the visceral hatred that everyone else has. I thought it was fine, but certainly not worth, and it's woven, but it's certainly not worth the $60 price tag to me. But I don't think that's, I would say that's a lukewarm take. I don't think that's a hot take.
So I do have the issue that I'm loving the USB-C lifestyle with these new phones.
Oh, yeah.
Like the the amount of, especially because I upgraded my phone and Tiff's phone at the same time,
and our
kid doesn't have a phone yet, so that's the whole family. So
you and I are living the best life.
Yeah, so it's great. So we were able to get rid of almost every lightning cable in almost every place that we had one. You know, so cars, all the different charging locations around the house. You know, we'd already switched our bedside things to MagSafe, so that's long solved.
What about when you have to charge your mouse?
So so here's the problem, right? So basically I think I'm only going to really need a lightning cable on my, like, at my desk. And so I've already moved some things. Like the way I use my laptop as a desktop, I don't use any hubs. The Pro Display XDR's ports on the back are the only port multiplication I have.
So slow down. I want to pull on this a little bit. What do you have plugged into the Pro Display XDR, and how many slots, ports, whatever, are there on the back of that thing?
There's three that you can use, and I should clarify, when I said I don't have any hubs, that's not true. I don't have any USB-C or Thunderbolt hubs. I have a USB-A hub for like power cords and stuff. But
so
anyway,
what's connected to the display? Do you have Ethernet, presumably?
So I keep two ports. The two ports on the laptop that face the wall, so like as it's docked in a little stand, those two ports are the XDR cable and my Ethernet Thunderbolt adapter. I still use the old Thunderbolt 2 or Thunderbolt, I guess it's Thunderbolt 1. I still use that adapter into a Thunderbolt 3 adapter because it's super fast. And remember there was that issue with like the certain chipsets of, like last year or the year before?
Oh, and this bypassed all of that.
So I still use that as my setup, like the Thunderbolt 3 to 2 adapter into Apple's original Thunderbolt Ethernet adapter, which is it's wonderful. Anyway, so that's one port on the laptop. XDR is the other port. And then the XDR's upstream ports, I have my USB pre, the interface I'm using to talk to you right now. I have the other one is the webcam on top of it. Mm-hmm. And then I have one cable that comes down and out front from the display. And that has always been my like desk iPhone cable for when I have to plug in my phone for Xcode or whatever. And that's always been Lightning. And that would also then, occasionally I would unplug it from the phone and charge up the trackpad and the mouse that I have here, both of which need Lightning. Right. Well, now I just replaced that cable with a USB 3.0 or 3.1 Gen 2x2 Xbox Series S X.
QRSTUV.
Whatever the heck the modern USB cables are called.
Right.
So whatever that is, I just replaced it with that. My feeling was that should be fine because when I'm doing Xcode development, if I have a USB 3 cable, maybe the app will transfer to the phone slightly noticeably faster, and that'll reduce my cycle time on that. So that actually would be noticeable to me.
All right, here's another problem. Another thread I want to pull on. So I've done not a ton of development on device with the new version of Xcode or Xcode 15 and my iPhone 15, but I've done some. I feel like this flew by, and I don't remember if it was Steve Sean Smith or maybe it was Chalk. Somebody was talking about this, but it seems to me like, and maybe this is different with my iPhone 15, maybe I just didn't notice it with the 14, but with Xcode 15 and my iPhone 15, it really wants to use Wi-Fi a lot. And that's really annoying because even if the phone is plugged in, it appears to me that it's still doing the installation and communication and whatnot over Wi-Fi, which I want nothing to do with. That's the whole point. Like you said, Marco, that's the whole point of this fancy pants USB 3.2 QRSTUV cable. I did the same thing. And I am pretty sure this is all gut feeling. I have no science that I can provide for this, but I'm pretty sure it's trying to use Wi-Fi. And I am not digging that because when I think I took my computer off Wi-Fi because I was plugged into Ethernet at the time, and then it was lightning fast. Well, poor choice of words. It was extremely fast. But when I had Wi-Fi on my laptop and on the phone, of course, I'm pretty darn sure it was trying to go over Wi-Fi, and that was not fun. Did not enjoy that.
Well, I can say confidently that it works great over USB C 3.
Yeah, I agree.
And I can tell like when, because so with the new version of Xcode that starting from this summer's beta, I believe it would, anytime you'd plug in a phone for testing, it would then, after it was plugged in once, it would allow it to be on Wi-Fi in the future, which is convenient actually, but it is slower, and you do notice the difference. But anyway, as soon as you have the cable plugged in, it uses that, as far as I can tell. So that's wonderful. Anyway, so now I have this problem where now I have like my ports are full. I want to charge stuff on my desk sometimes, so I guess I'm going to have to like get either like one of those little USB-C to Lightning hats for the cable, or I guess just have a separate Lightning cable somewhere for my unsightly keyboard and mouse charging, or trackpad and mouse charging at some point. Anyway, all this is to say, this arrangement was great until I tried to plug in this USB-C 3.0 QRSTUV cable into my phone through the fine woven case hole, and it does not fit.
Oh, uh-oh. Oh, no's. Oh, no's. That's no good. That's not fun. Yeah, so I'm jumping ahead, actually, but I guess I will tease instead. I'll be a professional podcaster, and I'll tease that I finally have committed to semi-begrudgingly a case on my phone, and the USB-C hole is quite large, and I am quite happy with that particular portion of the case. Also, I should point out that, speaking of earlier, Craig Hockenberry, he has found some sort of like Medusa multi-headed cable that he swears by. I don't think I'll be able to find it for the show notes, but if somebody points me to it, I will link it in the show notes even retroactively. But there's some Medusa thing that he swears by that apparently is very good.
There are a bunch of them, but like, I don't understand how anybody can tolerate them, because it is the definition of untidy cable mess. There is no way to use it tidily, because you will only plug in one of those and the other ones are just going to be like dangling out there at right angles, wiggling all around, getting in the way, clacking into your screen. It's just soap. It's like, do not want.
Yeah. Also, those like, you know, multi-head or adaptable cables tend to only be USB 2. And if I'm going to have USB 2 speeds, I might as well use Apple's nice little woven cable the phone came with. So that's probably what I'm going to end up doing, and just tolerate the lower speeds, or go back to caseless, or get a case with a bigger USB-C hole.
You said you've got the big USB-A thing for charging. Just get a nice long lightning cable and plug it into that, right?
That's probably what I'll end up having to do. But sometimes you need to plug in the keyboard.
You
need to plug in the lightning to the computer to make the accessories pair correctly. Like if they.
Yeah, what about like your dev phones that are your pre-USB dev phones?
Right, that's another thing. So I still have two Lightning phones on my desk most of the time that I'm testing, so I gotta figure out those. Like right now, I'm just charging them with MagSafe on a little stand, but I gotta figure out, like, you know, do I need to plug them in sometimes? And so it's gonna be a whole thing. Anyway, all this is to say, I understand the fine woven case better now with some time. I was going to return it, and I missed the return window, so I'm stuck with it now, and. So I decided, let me actually try to use it. And when I compare it to the Peak Design case, by the way, follow up on that, the thing we talked about last week about Peak Design possibly like kind of recalling their cases or like, you know, issuing free replacements, they apparently are actually going to do that. That there's been a little more concrete statements from them on that since then. So that's apparently going to happen, and that's awesome. Anyway, I've been kind of switching off between the Peak Design case, the fine woven, and my and just no case. And I love the way the phone feels caseless. I love the way it feels with the Peak Design case a little bit more than with the fine woven, but the Peak Design case has worse buttons and is heavier and bigger. And so the fine woven actually provides, you know, some protection, but it's really thin and light compared to like the full, you know, the bigger Peak Design case, which is more, you know, it's more made for like, you know, a more rugged lifestyle than I actually lead. But anyway, so I've actually been enjoying the fine woven. If I'm going to have a case at all, which I think I'm still going to go back and forth on, but if I'm going to have a case at all, the fine woven, I think, is actually, it fits my needs better than I expected it to, as long as I never mess up the back. But as previously stated, I never look at the back of my phone. So maybe I just won't know or won't care once I finally do mess up this wonderful fine texture. But so far, it's actually not as bad as I thought it would be.
That's a very, very ringing endorsement. You could say it's, as we've said before, the ultra fine woven case.
Also, like, it kind of just like as a curiosity, I decided to weigh and measure the phone with the Peak Design case and with the fine woven. And when I add the Peak Design case to the 15 Pro, it makes it almost the size and weight of the Pro Max. Like, cases add a decent amount of bulk, and you don't often think about it. But when you're talking about, you know, the difference between the phones being not that much size and not that many grams anymore, cases can actually, like, jump that difference for you. So I've been really enjoying using the phone caseless because it feels so good in the hand and it is so much lighter. When I add the Peak Design case to it, it actually makes it substantial, like noticeably bigger and heavier. And it doesn't make it feel like, you know, impossible or anything, but you do really notice that bulk. Whereas the fine woven case is kind of in the middle. You don't not notice it, but it's substantially more palatable and doesn't feel like you're ruining the gains we've made with this phone generation as much as the Peak Design case. So that's why, like, I think if I'm going to have a case at all, which is still up for debate, but if I'm going to have a case at all, I think the fine woven or something else that's thin and light might be the better move.
What are you going to do about the fact that you can't plug in the cable?
I probably going to either, you know, take a Dremel to it and hope for the best, or I really shouldn't do that because I would mess it up.
Can get a cable that'll fit. You know, you just have to shop based on the size of the connector.
I know. I was trying to have all the same cables. Like, I wanted, I had this grand goal of like, all right, I'm going to have all of my charging USB-C cables be white because I have these wonderful Anker ones that I really like that are super flexible and nice. Like, all right, I'm going to have all the charging USB-Cs be white and all the data ones be black.
Oh, that's clever.
So that way I can tell quickly, you know, does this cable support fast data or not? And so I figured these two cables out on Amazon that had good reviews, were from good companies, and so I'm already now, it's already ruined. Like, now I already got to throw away or move or reassign these black cables that I got to different roles, and or get a different one for my desk. Then I got to keep it straight. It's a whole thing. So
did you order this before or after I told my story about the thing not fitting?
Before.
I don't know. That's what you get.
I know. It's my fault. I take full responsibility. But there it is.
Bummer. All right, let's do some follow-up. And buckle up, everyone, because we are going on a journey. John, what's going on?
I think about 6 months ago on this program, I discussed a bug I was experiencing. I think I brought it up on the show because I had a breakthrough at that point. I don't remember how old it is. My recollection is that either I had this breakthrough around macOS 13.3, or that's when I started noticing the bug. But either way, the bug is this. Sometimes I'll be dragging a window around and it will go like real slow, like it's going through molasses, like it's not keeping up with my cursor. Like, I'll grab a window and I'll move it and my cursor will move an inch and the window will be like, all right, I'm coming. I'll get there eventually. and for a while, I'm like, oh, well, this is some kind of weird thing. I'll just restart and that'll fix it. And the restarts were fixing it. And then eventually I figured out, this bug only happens when I have more than one user logged into the computer. And I figured that out. It just occurred to me one, you know, it's like, why does it get fixed by restart? Well, when I restart, I just log into my account and there's only one account logged in. But eventually I go over to my wife's account, log into her account to go to the photo library. This was before iCloud showed photo library, but I still go over there because so much stuff isn't shared. And yeah, eventually I would log into my wife's account and then the bug would happen and I figured it out. Okay. And I filed this with Apple and I was trying to, you know, I think actually I did file it before that and I thought it was something different. And then I'm like, okay, now I know what it is, Apple. It's easy for you to reproduce. You just got to log in with more than one user. Anyway, that was 6 months ago. And I'm, you know, obviously no response on the bug report because obviously. But I was like, you know, this is still bothering me. When Sonoma betas were released, remember I said on the show, hey, I loaded the latest Sonoma beta and I think my bug is gone because I tried it on my Sonoma, you know, external disk that I boot from and I couldn't reproduce the bug anymore. And I said at the time, either they fixed it in Sonoma or it's just because my Sonoma external boot disk was like a clean install. Right. And I said, well, I'll find out which one of those things it is when Sonoma is released for Reelsy Reels. And I put it on my real, you know, my main boot drive. And so Sonoma was released. And after last week's show, I did put it on my main boot drive. And the very first thing I did was logged into a second account and tested whether the bug is still there. And it was still there. And I said, no. Just like I was so confident that it was going to be fixed because it was fixed in that beta. And I started to question everything. I'm like, was it really fixed in that beta, or did I not notice that only one? Was I really only logged in? But I'm pretty sure it was fixed in that. I don't understand. So anyway, I'm like, no, it's still there. It's still there in Sonoma. So now I'm going back into feedback and digging up my bug. And I'm like, yeah, there's still no activity on this bug, and it's still here. I had basically forgotten about it because I'm like, oh, it'll be fixed in Sonoma. I don't have to worry about it. But it's not. And so I was stewing on it for a while. Eventually, I decided, you know what? Every time I talk about YouTube, you're like, oh, there's some weird thing you got. It must be your Mac Pro or whatever. You know, you make stupid jokes about it. But like, that's you don't have this problem. And I don't hear about other people having the problem either. Right. Which is why you were like, oh, it must be an Intel thing or it must be because you have a weird Mac Pro or you have such a strange setup or whatever. So I'm like, you know what? Now that
when you have at least three graphics cards in your computer.
Yeah, right? I'll get to that. Actually, even before that, let me rewind a little bit. Once I found out that this happened in Sonoma, I'm like, it must have been the fact that it was a clean install. Like, I was still saying it didn't, you know, it was fixed in that Sonoma beta, but that was like booting off an external disk that had nothing on it, right? So it must be some third-party software or cruft or crap that's on my boot disk that's doing it. And so I spent a couple of weeks just tearing third-party software out of my Mac, just everything. I had previously, when we discussed this, I'd ripped out all Adobe software because I thought it was that, but it wasn't. I I purge Adobe from my system. Didn't help, right? But anyway, I'm going through the slash library folder, not tilde slash library, but just plain old slash library, because this bug is reproducible when you log into fresh accounts. I have like these test one and test two accounts that have nothing in them on, you know, on my boot disk. So like, it's not tilde slash anything, but slash library has lots of crap in it. I'm deleting the you know, unsanity windowshade.ape files in my slash library directory, stuff that predates your use of the Mac, probably. You don't remember like my slash library. I mean, that stuff was inert. It wasn't doing anything, but I'm just removing everything. I got to the point where I'm diffing my slash library against the slash library that's on the Sonoma Beta external drive.
Oh my goodness.
Like, what's, you know, recursive diff? Like, what third party stuff is in here? What could it possibly be? Right. And then over the course of doing that, I said, well, you know, I don't really want to be diffing against the last Sonoma Beta that's on my external disk. I should really update that external disk to the release version of Sonoma, just, you know, because what's the point? If I find out that you know, something is different about the beta, that doesn't mean it's the same as the release, right? So I updated my external drive to Sonoma. I erased the disk. I just erased it entirely and put Sonoma release on it, right? And I made two test accounts that are not even logged into any kind of Apple IDs, test one and test two, right? On that Sonoma thing. And when I did that, I booted into it. I'm like, now that I'm in here, let me just confirm that, like, on this clean install, it doesn't happen. And I tested it on the clean install, and I was able to reproduce it. And that's, so I'm like, oh, maybe was this actually fixed in a beta, or was I wrong? I don't understand how I could be wrong. I was like, I have plenty of experience with this bug, but like, was I really only logged into one account? But anyway, regardless of whether my memory is faulty or whatever, Sonoma release on a erased disk with two fresh user accounts that have nothing to do with my life or anything and are not signed into any Apple IDs, reproducible. That's when I started thinking about hardware, and Marco was making a joke. It's like, oh, you got a weird Mac Pro, these video cards in it, right? I'm like, I've got to do it. I'm going to open this machine up and start tearing stuff out of it, right?
Oh, my word.
Because I want to simplify my machine. So I was suspicious of the video cards too, because, hey, it's like a video related, you know, it's a graphical thing, or, you know, and I do have two video cards in my Mac Pro. One of them I use to drive my monitor. The other one is essentially just there for compute, which I rarely use. I remember I talked about using it when I was like cracking a notes document with a, you know, GPU powered decryption things. And that was cool. But I'm like, no, I got to pull that out. So I pulled out my unused video cards. Now there's just one video card in there. Didn't help. Still reproducible. That's when I took Mastodon and I said, okay, Mastodon, there's got to be somebody out there who follows me who has a 2019 Mac Pro with the AMD Radeon Vega 2 video card. So someone who matches my config. And I wasn't even asking them to have Sonoma, because I know this reproduced in Ventura as well. I said, does anybody out there have this configuration? Please look at this YouTube video. I recorded a new YouTube video to explain the bug. I narrated it with some terrible microphone, so it's awful. I'm sorry, but I will put a link in the show notes. Like, this is how you reproduce the bug.
Wait, why did you not use your good microphone?
Yeah, seriously.
The desk at that point had so much stuff on it that I wasn't, because it was a mess in here. You know what? It's easy-ish to open this thing, but it's a very big and very heavy computer, and it's got cables attached to it, and you have to disconnect all of those, and there was just no room for me to bring the podcast microphone out. It was a mess, right? I had boxes down here because I'm putting away the video card back in its original box and everything. Like, that's why. Whatever. I don't care.
Of course you are. You're going to have the thing out of the computer for 4 minutes, and you put it back in the original box?
No, I didn't put it back in. It's up in the attic now.
Oh, okay.
It's better for cooling, and, you know, practically speaking, I wasn't using that extra GPU compute power. If I ever needed it again, I can put it back in. Anyway, so I asked on Mastodon, someone out there, do you have the same config? And then people are like, oh, I've got one, I'll try it or whatever. You know, I think the instructions in my video are adequate for anyone to reproduce it, right? And that began a very eventful day of me going back and forth on Mastodon, trying to figure this out. Here is where things turn. So a bunch of people said, oh, I have a Mac Pro and I'll try it. And I was waiting for them, you know, whatever, they're going to try it today, tomorrow, whatever. At one point, friend of the show, Steve Trouton Smith said, I can't reproduce on my M1 at all. I would be curious to hear if it can repro on any Intel machine or with any AMD GPU. You know, I've heard this from so many people, like, I can't reproduce this. It must just be your weird setup or whatever. Then he continues, what kind of mouse/trackpad are you using? And what screen resolution? And my mind stuck on that first sentence. What kind of mouse/trackpad are you using? Like, you know what? I hadn't considered that at all at this point. Why would I? But as soon as he said it, something it's my mind latched onto him and said, oh my God. So I disconnected my mouse from my computer. I went over to my wife's computer. I took her mouse, which is a old Logitech thing with a little like USB-A dongle thing. I brought it over to my computer, connected her mouse to my computer, could not reproduce the bug.
And I was so it's your old stupid mouse.
So I'm like, yeah. So I posted on mouse and I'm like, I cannot believe this, but it's my stupid Microsoft mouse that I've ever had replaced once under warranty. It's the stupid mouse. Cause I did have the hardware problem with the mouse. I got it replaced under warranty. And I had actually bought a backup of it because I remember I like this mouse because I like the shape of it. I like how it feels, I like everything about it. But apparently, you know, I'm like, it's a stupid mouse. It wasn't the operating system at all. That's why nobody can reproduce it, because they don't have my stupid mouse. It's got to be the stupid mouse. I was like, I was annoyed, but I felt an incredible amount of relief and the eureka moment seeing the bug. Like, I can't reproduce it anymore. My wife's mouse, and she's got it's just an old crappy Logitech mouse. Nothing special about it. I can't reproduce it with her mouse. That must have been it. It must have been my mouse. But, you know, being a career programmer, I didn't let it go with that and say, I'm satisfied that I've solved this problem. Let me just close that feedback and say, never mind, Apple. It was my stupid mouse. You don't have to worry about it. I'm closing this feedback. I think I already made that mistake once when I closed this, but I thought it had been fixed. But, you know, anyway, I'm like, if it really is the mouse, this should be pretty easy to confirm. And so then I did, over the course of the day, I did a long series of experiments. And it was a depressing series of experiments because I'm not going to go through it all. You can follow the threads on Mastodon if you really want to. But it is a roller coaster. Lots of people are still finding the original one. I'm like, oh, it's my mouse. They're like, ha, I'm glad you figured it out. I'm like, keep reading. Here's the deal with this bug. Has nothing to do with my Mac Pro. Has nothing to do with Intel. Also, kind of, sort of has something to do with my mouse, but not in the way that you think. Over the course of the day, many people were able to reproduce it, and based on their responses, I was able to reproduce it. Here are all the places and ways that I was able to reproduce it. I reproduced it on my Mac Pro, of course, in a clean install of Sonoma and in my regular install. And by the way, on the clean install, the reason I do that clean install is that installation has zero third-party software on it. Nothing. No apps. No nothing. It does not have a shred of software from anybody other than Apple on it by design, right? So everybody who was saying it must be a kernel extension or a Logitech driver or whatever. Some people did say when you plug in the mouse, it must download a driver from Logitech. I'm like, I'm not sure about that. But anyway, I was able to reproduce it on my Intel MacBook Air running Ventura. I was able to reproduce it on my wife's Mac Studio, which is an M1 Max running Sonoma. I was able to reproduce that on all of those computers with the following mice: Logitech M705, Logitech MX Master 3, Logitech MX300, Microsoft Precision Mouse connected through USB and Bluetooth, and Apple Mighty Mouse, which was, I was trying to find an Apple mouse, surprisingly difficult in my attic. I know where one is, but I'm not getting it because my Mac Pro came with the Apple mouse, but it's never been opened, and I'm not taking that out, right? It's like, that's easy.
Nobody in your house believes in the Magic Trackpad?
That's the thing. Let me go get my wife's old 5K iMac, and I opened the box. She bought that with a trackpad. So it didn't come with an Apple mouse. It came with an Apple trackpad, right? And it wasn't in the box. She must have it somewhere or whatever. Anyway, this is over the course of the day, because at first I thought it's just my mouse. My mouse is broken. And then I'm like, oh, but it only happens on my mouse when connected through USB. So it must be a USB thing and not Bluetooth. But then I was able to reproduce it in Bluetooth. Now here are the parameters. Here's the interesting part of this. So, and that's the reason why this is still a legit Apple bug, but the reproduction parameters are interesting. The quote unquote easiest way to reproduce this is, of course, the way I saw it first. On my Mac Pro with my Microsoft mouse connected through USB, which is how I use it, that reproduces super easy. And the steps are basically make sure at least two users logged in. One of the users, nothing open on them. Just, they don't have any apps open, any windows open, just nothing. They're just logged in, right? No third-party software, right? On the second user, open 25 windows. Any windows in any app. Doesn't matter what it is. And then just grab any window and try to move it, and you'll reproduce the bug. And this is, I tried to make this clear in the video, but like, this is not about the system being overloaded, hot, runaway processes. The system is idle. Nothing is happening. Activity monitor, before you begin dragging a window around, shows nothing, 0% everything, nothing, right? Steve Trout and Smith actually made an app that just opens NS windows with nothing in them, as if, you know, if it detects that window isn't lightweight or what, doesn't matter what the app is, just a bunch of windows, right? So 25 windows, 25 Windows, completely idle system, no third-party software, no applications, no nothing. Nothing is running. 25 Windows, USB-connected Microsoft Precision Mouse. On the far end of this spectrum is Logitech mouse connected with their little RF dongle on an M1 Max Mac Studio. You need about 200 Windows to reproduce it there. And all those different combinations that I said between all those different mice and all those different computers, pretty much at every data point, 25, 50, like, it's just a question of how many Windows it takes. What are the parameters there? A lot of people have theorized that it is the polling rate of the mouse, and the higher the polling rate, the easier it is to reproduce. Certainly, it seems like the speed of the hardware might be a factor, because the M1 Max Mac Studio is obviously the fastest computer in the house, and that's the hardest to reproduce on, right? Because the Intel MacBook Air is slow, and my Mac Pro is slow these days, too. As far as CPU stuff goes, not GPU. Right. But basically, and other people are writing in and saying, I've got the Magic Mouse, I've got an Apple trackpad. Someone wrote in recently and said they were able to reproduce it using the built-in trackpad on their, you know, on their MacBook Pro. Right. So this is an Apple bug. And the reason most people don't see it, yes, haha, because they don't open a lot of Windows. But the combination that is the easiest to reproduce is with a mouse connected with a USB cable to an Intel Mac Pro.
That's and three people on the planet, John.
Right. Like, because how many people have Mac Pros? And if they do, how many people use a mouse instead of a trackpad? Maybe a lot, but how many use a wired mouse? Like, it's even hard to find wired mice, right? And when my mouse is, when this Microsoft mouse is connected through Bluetooth, I'm like, oh, it doesn't reproduce over Bluetooth. No, it's just harder. You just need to open more Windows. And I think a Bluetooth, you know, the Microsoft Precision Mouse with Bluetooth on my Mac Pro was like 50 Windows or 75 for reproduction. You'll look at the YouTube video. This is not one of those things where it's like, oh, it's hard to catch and it does it sometimes or whatever. It is 100% reproducible, trivially, instantaneously, always, all the time. It never doesn't do it. And it is super duper duper obvious. It's not subtle. It's not hard to see. It's not hard to reproduce. You don't need to do anything fancy. It's a three-step reproduction. So it was a long, depressing day where I thought I had figured, because I would have, you know, as much as it would annoy me if a mouse died, I would love to be rid of this bug and say, it's just my stupid mouse. Throw them out the window, buy a new mouse, look behind me, never, you never look back. But no, it is a legit operating system bug of some kind. The bad part is that to reproduce on a modern computer with sort of the default Apple setup, which is like, you know, a non-wired mouse or trackpad and a modern computer, you do need a lot of Windows, 100 to 200, depending, right? And Apple could look at that and say, okay, fine. So our window manager freaks out with 200 Windows, but we don't care, right? And I'll say, but what about my computer that freaks out with 25 Windows? And I spend most of my life with more than 25 Windows, which is why I saw it immediately. Like right now, I have way more than 25 Windows open. I'm never at just 25 Windows. What about my computer? Oh, just don't use the USB mouse. But I want to use USB mouse. I like it better than Bluetooth. It's more reliable. I don't have to worry about charging. So Apple folks, if you're listening, I know some people looked at this bug and they're like, they couldn't figure it out, but we as a community have collectively chased this bug down so far now that it's like how much more do you want? It's served up on a silver platter. Reproduction steps are literally three steps that now we've tested all these sorts of parameters. Like, you can do this, Apple. You can reproduce. I was going to ask you two before you came on the show today if you wanted to log into a second account so you could reproduce this without opening tons of Windows. But guess what? You can reproduce it while only being logged into one account. That's how far we chased this down. And if you're only logged into one account, you guessed it. You got to open more Windows, right? Like with two users logged in, you know, 25 Windows will do it on Mac. With one user logged in, I think it would probably take 300 or 400, right? So obviously having the second user logged in makes it way, it's not linear. It's not like you divide it by two or whatever. But yeah, some people, especially, I tried it on like my, you know, dinky Intel MacBook Air. You can reproduce it with one user logged in. This is just a problem with the window manager, right? Or something having to do with dragging Windows around, combined with like the thing that checks for where the cursor is, has some kind of terrible performance thing. And this is new. This started around macOS 13.3-ish. I can't nail it down exactly. This didn't happen in 12, 11, 10, or all the other versions. So something changed. Something is broken. Apple needs to fix this. I would love for something to happen related to this bug. We'll put the number in the show notes. If any Apple folks are still listening, it is FB1321176. I filed a new bug. Every time I find something new, I file a new bug with a better title, right? Unfortunately, this one was filed before I did all the stuff you just described there. So the title is Window Dragging is Laggy and Jumpy on More Than One User Logged In. I don't know what I would call the new bug. It would be like Window Dragging is Laggy and Jumpy when there are a lot of windows. I mean, what a terrible ongoing journey. I mean, now that the world knows about this, kind of, sort of, you two will probably never see it, but like, now that you know it exists, you may find yourself creeping up to it, like log into a second account, and you just may end up with enough windows open where you'll hit that threshold and you'll be like, because you might look at it and lots of people are saying, yeah, I have that too, and my computer is overloaded. No, that's not it. That's a different thing. Your computer being overloaded is an entirely different thing. And so I think if you guys ever got to the point where you had 75, 150 windows open and you logged into a second account and then all of a sudden window dragging was weird, you'd be like, huh, my computer must be overloaded. Maybe I should reboot. And you'd forget about it. But now you know better. Now you know that even if your computer was 100% idle and the only thing open was text edit with that number of windows open, your window dragging is going to be super laggy and slow. Oh, and the other fun thing, by the way, is the jumpiness. That is, in fact, the window snapping thing. You know, when you drag a window in macOS and it tries to like line itself up with its neighboring window, they added that in like Sierra something, or maybe High Sierra. You can disable that by holding down the Option key. And when you hold on the Option key and drag windows around, the jumpiness disappears. What you're left with is the massive lag. And basically the massive lag, the jumpiness comes from the fact that there's massive lag and the jumpy, you know, like the snapping is lagging, is ahead of where the window actually is, and it flips out and starts going all over the place. Anyway, if you hold on Option, you will just get the molasses-like lag and not get the jumpiness. So that totally shows that this is where is the problem? Is the problem in the window manager, or is the problem in the, you know, human interface device driver thing? Probably somewhere in the driver thing, because the window server is probably doing the right thing. It's just probably getting bogus input from the mouse. But further news as we continue to track this down, but the last revelation was it's when more than one user is logged in. And the new revelation is actually that just lets you see it more easily. And actually every single Mac and every single pointing device in the entire world is susceptible to this. It's just a question of what it takes to make it reproduce.
I mean, really, John, this is the reaping or whatever of your life choices. You're using an Intel Mac that you spent too much money on. You're using a wired mouse like it's 1996. I mean, hell, you're using a mouse like it's 2003, much less a wired mouse like it's 1996.
I'm never not going to use a mouse. Never.
See, I said that. I was that guy until 5 or 10 years ago, and I am all in on the trackpad. Trackpad's everywhere,
nope.
Man.
Nope. Why? Anyway, it happens with the trackpad. Mm-hmm. That's what sure I'm saying. Like, real, you could say this is my punishment for opening too many windows, but 25 is not too many. Go ahead, hit the little mission control and count your windows. I bet you all have more than 25 windows open right now.
Let's look.
Like, as in not hidden?
That's the thing. They do need to be visible. I suppose you can just do hide other and say, I can do hide other and say, look, I have one window open. It's the Zoom window. But no.
Like, I have five.
I have eight. One, two, three.
Not all windows, not just the ones that are visible. Do show all.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah, I have eight.
Show all? You have eight windows?
Yeah, I have one Safari window with two tabs. I have one Chrome window with 7 tabs. I have Visual Studio Code, which I use for show notes. I have Textual, which is the IRC app. Zoom, Audio Hijack, Slack, and Messages. That's
so
it.
How many
That's
is
everything.
That? How many
eight.
Is that? That's only eight?
Uh-huh. Mail's hidden. I'm sorry.
I don't know why you guys buy fancy computers. You might as well just get an iPad. Eight windows.
Wow.
What are your 20? Okay, tough guy. Let's do it. Let me hear your 25.
You don't want to do this. Do you really want?
I want to hear your 25 fucking windows. Let's hear.
All right. It's way more than 25.
Oh my gosh.
Google Chrome. Let's see.
With 3,000 tabs, right?
One, so that's your first problem. Not counting tabs. We're just counting windows. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 Chrome windows.
You have 13 Chrome windows? What the hell is wrong with you?
So, all right. Safari.
What's the context? Hold on.
Yeah, what is... Yeah,
okay,
I'm
know
sorry.
We did this before.
This is a mess.
But this is 13 different windows with tabs within each one. Like, what... So... Are these different projects you're working on? Like, why the split here?
Why do I use Safari and
No. How do you end up with 13 windows?
13 windows for the same browser, each of which has tabs in it.
So there's my main Chrome window, which has a fixed set of tabs in it that never changes, right? So let's ignore that one. There is the window with a bunch of tabs that was when I was trying to debug call recorder problems. Call recorder, by the way, does not work in Sonoma. A call recorder for Skype. I sent a tech support email about it. I'll close that one now. There is me looking up information about the release date of Ventura in a bunch of tabs when I was talking to some folks about this, just trying to pin down when this happened. There is the page with a bunch of tabs related to BBEdit language servers because I was debugging some issues with the PHP language server, Marco, and BBEdit.
I didn't write it.
I know. I'm just saying. Why am I doing it? Why do I have a PHP language server installed for BBEdit right now? All right. There are a bunch of pages related to Perl Unicode because I was doing some research for a tweet I posted about Unicode stuff. I can close that one now. There is a page with a bunch of tabs related to Sendable because I was messing with strict concurrency in Xcode. Maybe we'll touch on that at some point in the future. That has a bunch of tabs.
Part of my day as well.
Yeah, there are windows. Like these windows are like themed, right? They're like all the tabs in this window are about Sendable, you know, and how do you do Sendable with key value observing because it's an older API. Anyway, a bunch of tabs like that. Yeah, all right.
That's the answer. Don't.
Unfortunately, a lot of my apps are based heavily on key value observing. There's literally no other way to do it. Anyway, there is a page open with the YouTube Studio and the YouTube pages related to my video because every time I update the feedback, I put what I put in the description of the YouTube video for this bug. What else? Let me see.
Well, here's the thing, though. I kind of do want to make you go through all of this BS, but what I don't understand is there was a long time ago, I would say roundabouts of May 1st, 2015, that a wise man once said you should have empathy for the machine.
Mm-hmm.
There's no empathy here.
There's empathy, baby.
It's open. You don't need
You know why there's empathy? Because I endowed my Mac with 96 gigs of RAM. I know you can't have that much in your computers, your tiny little computers, but I can have that much.
64 gigs of RAM. It's not that different.
Well, I have 96 and there's plenty free. Anyway, I could continue enumerating them, but yeah, I will clean these up as I go through and close these things. But the language server thing from BBEdit, for example, I'm not actively pursuing that now, but occasionally it crashes and stuff. So I want to leave that open so that when it does crash, I can go consult it. Anyway.
By the way, real-time follow-up, the MacBook Pro is currently available with up to 96 gigs of memory.
Oh, see ya.
But not yours.
Well... I think
move those goalposts, John. Keep moving them. Yeah,
I said your computers. Yeah, he's got. He doesn't have the M2, right?
No, I have the M1, but still, like,
no, it was never offered with 96.
But the M2s are the ones currently available in the little laptop.
I have a similar number work windows open in Safari for the same reason. BBEdit. BBEdit. Oh, geez, too many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Oh my God!
Windows. John, you need
42 BBEdit windows.
42?
42, baby.
Do those have tabs in them?
No.
Okay, you need an intervention.
If you're working on a project, a directory for a web app or whatever in BBEdit, does one window hold like all the files? You can switch between them? Or?
You know, I rarely use that interface. I did when I was, for example, working on the CMS stuff, the ATP CMS. Did the one window
when you
project directory thing.
PHP? Right.
Yeah, but that's not what I prefer. I prefer separate windows. As you can see, I prefer separate windows. There's BBEdit windows at this point. There's a set of BBEdit windows that I essentially always have open. Just always.
This is lunacy.
I mean, I have that with TextMate too, but there's like four or three of them at most times.
Yeah, I have a lot more stuff. I have a lot more stuff going on. There's one. There's one Slack window. There's one Messages window.
Like
there are two Ivory windows.
The amount of like balls I have in the air right now are at an all time high in my life. Like I've never been busier and dealing with more projects and obligations and tasks than I'm doing right now. And I think I have if I include all the hidden windows, maybe I might have 15 windows open on my entire computer. Like
I've got more. I mean, there's one feedback assistant window. There's one Zoom window, one textual window, one system settings window. How many terminal windows? About 10-ish terminal windows.
John, you are aware that one can close.
I
one
do.
Of
like
these
I clean stuff up. Like in fact, while going through this thing, I closed a bunch of stuff that I was done with. I do occasionally go through and close things.
The reason
once
you need
a year?
The reason. The reason you need a $17,000 Mac Pro is because you are incapable of cleaning up your own mess.
That's not why. It's fine. And by the way, you're saying, oh, but how do you do that? Isn't that more than 25 windows? Isn't everything broken? Aha, but I only have one account logged in. So everything's fine. It would take way more windows than this to bog it down.
Wow.
I don't even know. I know we went over this. What was that? Episode 96, I believe.
Yeah, I got a lot of windows. I use it all. I use all the screen space. And I know you know this, but you can't actually hide them. You don't need to see them all at the same time.
But I don't understand why you can't, like, I mean, as much
I did write two separate programs for dealing with windows and pulling them forward and hiding them and making them go away. Like, there's, you know, there's a reason both of my applications have to do with windows. And the third one I was talking about writing but can't, it would also have to do with window management.
I love, part of the challenge of writing a podcast app as a kind of, I would call myself a moderately heavy podcast listener, is that there are people who use my app that have collections that are like 10 times the size of mine. And so it's hard for me to actually, you know, for me to know what the app is going to be like for them. And it's hard to architect the app in such a way that it performs well for them because I'm not seeing that every day. John has no such problems with his apps because no one is using John's apps with more windows than John.
But the thing is, what I do get for reports for my thing is people who are using apps that I've literally never even heard of that do ridiculous things. Like, you know, I don't even know what these apps do. I've downloaded so many apps because someone will say, hey, I was using this 3D app you've never heard of. Which one did I download recently? Maybe it was Rhino 3D. I think I've actually heard of that one. Maybe it was something different.
That's been around forever.
Yeah, but they'll send me these apps. There was one that started with an A. There was like some kind of audio editor that was not Audacity. And they'll send me them and say, just download the demo and do it. You know, and I do it. And I I'm always amazed at the apps.
Do you leave it open
find.
Forever after that? Like, oh, I can't figure out how to quit.
No, so I do. I mean, I delete that stuff. I always look at the is this going to put crap on my system? Anyway, sometimes I boot into another disk to do it because I don't know what they're going to install. But it was just, anyway, you still do get reports of like, hey, this app does some weird thing that interacts with it. And those are good reports. But yeah, in terms of opening Windows, pretty good to go there. There's the Brent Simmons stories they told years ago that I used to use NetNewsWire, and you'll be shocked to learn that I had a million subscriptions in NetNewsWire. And he would, I would complain to him about like, hey, I'm using the app and this thing is kind of slow. And he's like, what do you mean it's slow? It's lightning fast. I'm like, well, eventually we get to how many subscriptions do you have? So I think he wrote a blog post about that once. Like, yeah, it's a computer. It's I don't like if you don't put a limit on the amount of things you can have, I will use the computer to do what computers are good at, which is remember a bunch of stuff for me so I don't have to.
John, at what point do you have an are we the baddies moment? At what point do you, rather than bending everything to your lunatic setup?
25 windows is not a lunatic setup. I will stand by that. I know I have a lot of windows, but 25 is not a lot. It is just not.
Okay.
Look at the video. 25 windows. It's not like, oh, it gets a little bit slower at 25 windows. It is unusable at 25 windows. Just mad. Like as in, look in the video. At one point, I tried to like reset to like, oh, let me just drag this window back to where it was. I can't, physically can't put the window back where it was because it is so messed up. Like, you've seen this video, like the recording where I said, let me just put, I'm trying to put the sticky note back where it was. I literally can't do it. That's not like, oh, you're just annoyed because it's a little bit laggy when you have a million windows. No, it is unusable with 25, with two users logged in. But again, two users logged in is not unheard of, and I use that frequently. So I think my report is legitimate, and I think Apple should fix this. But I fear, because I am using an older computer and because it's Intel and because blah, 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 like they'll say, well, it's so much harder to reproduce on the M1s that we'll just sweep this under the carpet and say this is not a big deal and no one will ever have 200 windows open.
I mean, I feel like I agree with you that this is a legit problem and it legitimately should be fixed as much as I'm snarking and giving you all
and by the way, like forget about like the problem. This is a sign that something is wrong in the code.
Agreed.
Like
yeah,
it's not I like agree. The computer quote unquote can't handle it because it's just too much. It should be able to handle it. This should be nothing. And it was like in, you know, in macOS 10.2 Jaguar, you could have 25 windows up until the user logged in and it would go fine. Like I'm not asking it to do. It just seems, oh, you have a lot of windows. That's kind of like the naive person's understanding of computers. Oh, I think my computer is overloaded because I have too many windows open. No, that is not a thing. I'm not like things that you can have one window open with an infinite loop in JavaScript on some Facebook page. Yeah, that can probably, you know, make your things. But like the number of windows open seems like a lot to us because it is like visually oppressive, right? But as far as the computer is concerned, 25 empty text edit windows is not stressing it at all, right? Just it's not, right? So that's the thing where it's like you have yourself to blame because you're overloading the computer. This is not overloading the computer at all.
okay, I'm gonna let that slide by. I agree with you that this should be fixed. I agree with you. It's indicative of a deeper problem. But golly, at some point, I wonder if maybe it's time to rethink your strategy here a little bit there, big guy.
So my strategy should be, I'm going to make sure I use less than 25 windows so I can drag them without...
No, all kidding aside, I think the strategy is, and this is going to sound snarky, and I'm trying to take off the snark hat. It was fully on my head earlier, but I'm trying to take it off now. Like, log out of the other user if you're done using whatever.
But that's so annoying to do because I go back and forth. It's so annoying to
do. How often do you go back and forth?
Well, let me tell you why. This is related to another bug report. Why do I have to leave my wife's account logged in? Because if I don't, it will never do face analysis because she has to be logged in for the conditions to be just right for the stupid face analysis thing to run. Okay. It's like, don't use the Photos app, but make sure you've run it at least once to launch the photo demons. But the user has to be logged in. I'm pretty sure if she's not logged in, Photo Analysis D will not run against her library.
Wait, hold on. Just clarifying a question here. Why doesn't her library live on her Mac Studio?
It does. It does live on her Mac Studio.
So is there a reason she has to be logged into your Mac Pro all the time?
She's not logged in all the time, but when I'm working on photo stuff on my computer and she hasn't launched photos like recently, and also I'm not sure how long it takes for that stuff to sync. Like, I'm doing work in the photo library on my computer on her account. So I don't have to be hogging her computer. That's the whole point of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I could go over to her computer and say, let me launch photos and let me launch activity monitor and let me make sure. Because if she's using her computer, Photo Analysis D is going to be like, oh, I can't run now because she's using the computer and I'm only supposed to run a background priority. You know, it does help that it is on her computer. And I have, when she's at work, gone and tried to make it run on her computer. But that's one of the reasons why I'm constantly leaving her logged in. And you know, I don't want to leave her logged in because it makes my windowing experience terrible. But sometimes I have to leave her logged in.
Well, then,
anyway, I hop back and forth. Like, let me do something over here. Let me do something over there. I wish I could hop back and forth faster. I kind of wish fast user switching was even faster. Remember when I used to do the cube rotation effect? I was annoyed that slowed me down. But the point is, these are features of the operating system. I'm using the computer. It's supposed to be able to do these things. I'm not going to, like, shrink myself down to work around a bizarre bug in the IO subsystem of the recent versions only of the Mac operating system.
I feel like I'd be a little more... I guess I'd be a little less patient if this hit me. Like, you know, whenever I run into a problem with something that Apple's doing that I can, like, modify some habit or way I'm using something to just completely set up the problem, I'll usually just choose to do that.
Like, I mean, yeah, there's only one user logged in now. Like, I don't leave. As soon as this bug hit in 13.3, I stopped my old habit of just constantly leaving her logged in. For example, on my wife's computer, like, every user is logged in all the time. Because why wouldn't? Because just, you know, it's convenient because it's a kind of a shared computer and, you know. But yeah, I used to leave multi-users logged in now, but now, since this bug happened, what I've changed is I am the only logged in user unless I actually need to be doing something on her account.
I don't know. I feel like this is the same as all of us when we were all giving Mike garbage because he was having some sort of issue with his phone and everyone just kept telling him to, you know, what was it? Dump everything and, like, start anew. I forget the term that we were using
for the phone.
Yeah, restore the phone. And he was furious.
I'd be totally willing to do that if it would fix the problem. But as we know now, it would not.
Well, but I feel like what's happening is we're all saying to you, change the way you're using the phone. Or excuse me, using the computer. And the same way we were saying to him, just try to restore. Well, John, just try to change the way that you use the computer.
But less than 25 windows is a non-starter. Like, just non-starter. It's never going to happen. Never. Like, why would I do that? I could have more than 25 windows open on my Mac Plus. And the Finder. I mean, come on, 25 windows.
You don't need all of these open concurrently. You may want them, but you don't need them to be open concurrently. You just don't.
But that's what the computer is doing for me.
Apparently.
I don't need to have more than one application open at once. I lived a long time, especially in terms of my formative years, where only one application could be open at a time. You just quit one and launch the other one, and it's fine. But come on, that's what computers are for.
I mean, why not also just, like, try a different mouse that has a higher limit? You know, like that. Like,
right?
There's so many options. Yeah, there are so many options.
I did switch to Bluetooth on this one. Yeah, I mean, the limit, unfortunately, on my computer I tried all the mice I have access to. The limit doesn't go up high enough. I can get it up to, like, 50 or 75, but, like, it's not far enough up that, like, oh, I won't see this anymore. I'll still see it because it is kind of a slope. It's not like it doesn't happen and all of a sudden it happens. There's a gradient, right? So with 25, you see it less with Bluetooth. With 50, you start to see a little bit more. With 75, it's back in full force. It's not great. And also, like, Bluetooth maybe it's because my Mac is farther away. I don't know. Like, I always feel like Bluetooth is not as reliable and smooth as USB, at least under this stupid mouse.
I mean,
and the other mice, as we established, I don't like the shape of them, right? So I like, you know, it's it's hard. Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to go Bluetooth now because Bluetooth solves the problem, before I had figured out that Bluetooth didn't solve the problem. And I was all ready to go all Bluetooth because I'll deal with the lag if this just solves it, or, you know, start shopping for a new mouse. But once I determined that this didn't solve the problem, like, no, this is not Apple to fix.
No, I mean, see, the thing is, like, I fully agree with you. This is a real problem, and they should fix it. However, mm-hmm. it's a difference of philosophy of, like, what do I do as the person suffering from this problem? Like, I'm not suffering from it now.
Like I said,
forever. Or
I'm not suffering from it now because only one user is logged in. Like, that's the common case now, is only one user is logged in, and so I don't suffer from it. Right.
Oh my.
So with one user logged in, like, it's not linear. It's not, like I said, with one user logged in, it doesn't take twice as many windows. It takes like 5-10 times as many. Like, right now, one user logged in and I have, what, 100 windows open, and it's fine, right? So this is how I spend most of my time using the computer. It's just that every time I have to go to my wife's account, I basically have to, like, now I'm intentionally causing this thing to happen, and I'll be like this for the rest of the day. So remember, if you're going to move windows around, hide windows first. That's the real modification that you guys haven't touched on that I have to do, because remember, it's just the visibility of the windows, not the fact that they're open. So Command Option H is your friend, because that essentially solves the problem. If you just constantly hide others or option click away from one app to another, how many windows are visible on the screen. Because if they're not visible on the screen, the Windows server doesn't try to snap to them and doesn't do all that, like. And I don't know why the visibility of the windows affects the mouse tracking part, but it does. Like, experimentally, visibility of the windows is the determining factor. So that is the modification of behavior that I probably should be doing more often. Hiding other windows, not closing them.
Oh, my word. At what point are you going to just dedicate a day or two to doing a manual git bisect and trying to figure out exactly when this was introduced?
I don't have the source code to the operating system. I know that.
Not a literal one. I'm saying, like, I'm both kidding and actually not kidding. You said that it was around, what, 13.3 or something like that? If I forget what version
said,
but you could go to version 13.2, install it, see if it happens. Version 13.2.1, I don't know if that's even a thing, but, you know, and you could try doing
it's hard to
what
get those
is
installers. I could do that, but, like, honestly, that's, like, what? I don't care. Like, I don't think that's going to help that much. And if Apple cares, they can figure that out. Like, it's their thing. Like, you know.
Well, yes, but here again, like, jokes have left the room. You've put in an inordinate amount of work trying to figure out and narrow down what this is. And I commend you, as much as I'm giving you a hard time, I commend you for it, because I wouldn't have that freaking patience.
No,
and I think Marco was saying that he wouldn't have.
I mean, I let it lie for like 6 months figuring out, you know, either it's not a big deal or it'll be fixed in Sonoma, because it seems like it's fixed in Sonoma. But now that I know that it's not, it came roaring back. I'm like, no, this needs to be addressed.
Again, I genuinely admire your tenacity, as much as I'm giving you a whole pile of poop. I genuinely admire your tenacity. But at this point, like, I feel like if Apple isn't doing anything about it now, and there's maybe a bunch of innocent reasons and a bunch of
we don't know if they might be doing stuff about it. I just don't know.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if there was some feedback? But anyway,
it's only been 6 months, Casey.
Yeah. Right. A mere 6 months. It hasn't even been a decade. But I almost wonder if you went and did this quote unquote git bisect and said it's in 13.2.79 or whatever, that I wonder if that would get them to be, I was going to say less lazy, but that's not fair. I wonder if that would
they'd have to like diff the operating system, diff Sonoma against 13.1. Like, because they don't even know what the problem is. Like, I'm not going to tell them how to debug this, because the operating system is huge. There's millions of lines of code. Like, you know how many diffs there must be between 13 point something and 14?
No, that's exactly my point. If you said it wasn't in 13.3, but it is in 13.4, again, I'm getting these numbers wrong.
Yeah,
then
maybe
that narrows the problem space.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could have been the type of thing that get crept up over time. That would be a very unfortunate result of me doing that experiment, which was like, well, it's harder to trigger in 13.1, harder still in 13.0, because again, it's not like a thing where it's on and off. It's just like a gradient of badness, depending on how much stuff you're doing. But yeah,
oh, my word.
It's annoying. I mean, I don't envy them trying to track down this bug. I'm just trying to help here. Like, and like I said, the main thing I fear is, like, I mean, it's a fear, but it's also the type of thing of, like, well, if it's really hard to reproduce on faster Macs, eventually when I get an M3 Mac or something, or an M4 Mac, it'll take 700 windows to reproduce, and I'll never see it again, because I never.
Oh, you
many.
Will. You
no,
will.
I've never
you'll,
been that
you'll
high.
Hit that limit. If there is a limit, you'll find it.
I don't think so. I don't think there is, like, if I need a much bigger screen windows, because there is a crowding. And remember, it's visible windows. They have to be visible. And, you know, there's a limit to how many can be visible.
You know what? Another thing, again, jokes have left the room. Another thing that I wonder if it'd be worth you trying, and I know you're going to vomit all over your desk when I bring this up, but what if you tried Spaces? I wonder if using Spaces and putting, I don't know, all the Chrome windows in one space, which I will be the first to tell you that that would dramatically change the way you use your computer. And I'm not arguing that, but I wonder if that would be at least an interesting way.
Hideout is way faster than Spaces and essentially accomplishes the same purpose. You know what I mean? Or even Stage Manager, like anything, like it's just visibility. Like I don't need to put them way over another space. I just need to option click away from one app to another, you know, and hide them behind me. Right. It's hiding is not bad. And I do hide most of the time. It's just that in certain scenarios, I have several clusters of things going on and it's enough for it to be annoying. I think you'll be less sympathetic if and when you start encountering this, because considering this has gotten worse over time, it either didn't exist and then did exist, or it has gotten worse, right? Because I didn't notice this at all, and I would have, because it's not like I've changed. I didn't notice this at all, a year or two ago, and now I notice it a lot. So it may be coming for you guys eventually, because if it continues to get worse, if you ever log in a second user, even with your 8 windows open, you might see it. And not as severely, but you might see it a little bit. You're like, huh, is this app slow? Why is it lagging behind the cursor a little bit? Like, in theory, 8 windows is, you should be able to see some amount of lag if you were to like micro analyze it in slow-mo video, right? Because it is not, again, it's not like not happening and then happening. It's just a matter of degree. How much is it happening? With 8 windows, it's happening more than it is with 7, which is more than it is with 6, which is more than it is with 5. You know, it's happening to you too. You just don't know it.
I mean, maybe. I think like possible, but
Casey and I use so many fewer windows. Also, we're using, you know, Apple Silicon Macs, and I use an Apple mouse.
I don't think it's the Apple mouse. I think it's the polling rate of the mouse. That's why I think Bluetooth is harder than USB, because I think USB allows lower latency and more polling, especially for like the fancy mice, like this Microsoft one. It's not that fancy, but like Logitech MX Master 3, I think is a semi, well, maybe it's not that high.
Well, it's more like the combination of conditions that I'm using. Like I'm using their recent hardware, I'm using their mouse. I think it's much less likely that a bug that affects me in that way would ever get through Apple, because they would hit it. Like this, I'm using hardware in combinations and software in patterns that they expect. I'm like, I'm on the happy path. I'm using the mainstream stuff. You have some kind of fringe edge case things around. You have this weird Microsoft mouse. You're using the Mac Pro. You have
the Microsoft mouse is not, that's what I'm getting. The Microsoft mouse is not weird. It's just a USB connected mouse, right?
Well, to Apple, it's weird.
Yeah,
you know, pick a Logitech, plain old Logitech USB connected mouse. Not weird. Easy to reproduce. It's not just a Microsoft mouse. Like I think it really has to do with the polling rate. I don't have a way of telling what the polling rate is. But yeah, but some people said they reproduced it with the built-in trackpad on their MacBook Pro. So that's a pretty happy path too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Fair. All right. Hi,
anyway,
Future Marco.
I do think you two should both reproduce this next week. I'll have you log into a second account before we start recording, just so you can see it for yourself. Just so you know, you will know that your computers are not immune.
Okay, if it would make you feel better.
Yeah. It's real easy to do. It's 3 steps. We've done so fast.
You're going to have to remind me, but I will be happy to do that experiment for you, John.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hi, Future Marco. We have gone an hour and 5 minutes busting John's balls. So how do you want to skin this cat? Do you want to finish FU? Do you want to jump straight to Ask ATP? What do we do? You want to do a topic or two?
I think we should do the overheating thing for sure, because that is timely.
Let's do that. Fair. And then maybe the laptop rumor.
Let's see. Overheating. Is there anything that is?
I'd like to have at least one new topic in the show. Right?
Yeah. No, the overheating is kind of newish, but yeah, the overheating thing and then laptop, I think.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Let's see. Where are these in the notes? Okay. The laptop thing is at the
overheating is right.
Topics.
Oh, you can do your case. Oh, no. Yeah. We have to skip your case, Casey, unless it's time.
No, that's fine. No, that's fine. I'm not worried about that.
I am going to cut a lot of my intro just for the record, but you know, but it's not going to save us an hour.
All right. I'm not trying to be funny. Are you two ready?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, so breaking news as we record tonight on Wednesday night, Apple just today has released 17.0.3. This update provides important bug fixes, security updates, and addresses an issue that may cause iPhone, I still don't like that they don't use the, may cause iPhone to run warmer than expected. What is going on here? Apparently, all of our iPhone 15s are melting, and I think Marco, you broke this news, what, a week or two ago, when you said during your transfer, your iPhone attempted to melt into the desk.
Yeah, it was thermally throttling itself and telling me that. This whole thing, you know, the heat gate, or, you know, it's, you know, as Gruber and Maltz said on the talk show, like, it's gate season, you know, all the scandals about the iPhone, and, you know, I got my fine moving case with the hole that's too small and the material that scratches easily, and here I got my iPhone 15 Pro with its overheating chip in the heavy use of the first day. And it's hard to know, you know, look, if the iPhone 15 Pro really does run a little hotter, Apple will never say that. Like, if this is a real problem, it absolutely will never be said. It will never even be looked
you
at.
Mean
it,
you never, mean if it's a hardware problem?
Yeah, if it's like a real shortcoming that's just inherent to the design and choices made for the iPhone 15 Pro, Apple will never in a million years say that.
Well, I don't understand. I don't think that's fair at all, because it's not like they've ever told us that we were holding a phone wrong. What are they going to tell us now that we're touching it wrong?
AntennaGate, they did confirm that this thing you said could happen if you did a thing. Yeah, if you do that thing, the thing you said does happen. So they did confirm that. And here's the other thing about the iPhone 15. Like, I haven't seen the teardowns from iFixit yet, but I don't think there's anything about the way it is constructed and cooled that is different than the 14 Pro in a way that it would be this profound. We talked about last time, like, well, the titanium has less mass. That means there's less mass to soak up the temperature, although I don't actually know.
I don't think that's how that works.
There's thermal mass, but there's also the fact that I don't know if titanium is better or worse at conducting heat than aluminum, right? And what, you know, alloy of titanium or, you know, anyway.
Or how,
there are a lot of factors.
I mean, even like how much of the heat from the chip, which is kind of in like the middle back of the phone, how much of that heat even makes it to the outer frame?
What I'm saying is that this phone is not radically different construction-wise. So what would have to be true for it to be a hardware issue is that something in it, presumably the SoC, would itself have to be radically different. Oh, this SoC gets way hotter, right? Or is capable of getting way hotter or whatever. And so far, I haven't seen any evidence of that the SoC, because it is 3 nanometers, even if it is no better than 5 nanometer, it should get a little hotter because it, you know, has more transistors, but, you know, is the density up that much? Like, it seems like the overheating is so, you know, obvious and severe that you would need, if it was a hardware related thing, it would have to be incredibly significant, like totally different cooling system, totally different design for the phone, or this SoC is just way, way hotter than the other one. And none of those things seem to be true. So I'm willing to take Apple's explanation at face value, which is this is a software problem.
Probably. And or at least, like, you know, software is a lot of things. You know, software could be the thermal regulation of the chip, like when does the chip throttle? Under what conditions? How far is it willing to push itself before it starts throttling? Because phone chips, if you run them hard, they do throttle. That's not a new thing. That's not a thing inherent to the iPhone 15. That's just like, you know, these chips have no active cooling. There's a certain limit to how far they can, or how long they can run at full blast, and they will throttle themselves if need be. And that's not new. That's not a scandal. That's not news. It could just be that, like, they ship the iPhone 15 Pro with bad trade-offs, or, you know, like a bad thermal regulation, you know, set of parameters. And
I mean, so here's, if you keep reading the Apple statement, they did spread a lot of the software blame around. This is quoting directly from Apple. The blah, 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 warmer. All right. So Apple says, we have also found a bug in iOS 17 that is impacting some users and will be addressed in a software update. So that's them saying, we've got a bug. Some part of iOS 17, it could be the part that you just talked about, Marco, that the part that controls how the thing thermal throttles or whatever, right? But that's them, the Apple, saying something wrong in iOS 17, we'll fix that. And then they say, another issue involves some recent updates to third-party apps that are causing them to overload the system. We were working with the app developers, blah, 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 blah. So they're blaming some third-party apps, and they're blaming the operating system. So there's enough software. And I think the third-party app ones is also kind of an operating system thing, because the operating system on iPhones, at least, is supposed to keep them kind of in check and not let them, you know, burn up the whole CPU or whatever. But there's enough vague software blame to go around to say, hey, there's nothing inherently wrong with the design of this phone. It's just that when you do a lot of stuff using... If you use a lot of CPU, it gets hot. And things are using more CPU than they quote unquote should be on a phone. And so that's why it's hot.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think this is probably, I think all of those things are true. I think there was probably, you know, these apps are using too much CPU. You know, the way iOS throttles app CPUs, it doesn't throttle you to like, all right, you're currently using 100% of a core. We're going to let you use 80% of a core forever. No, that isn't how it works. The way it works, at least last time I checked, maybe they've changed it, but the way it has usually worked is like you can use whatever you want as long as you're in the foreground and to an extent in the background as you're running. But anyway, you can use as much as you want, but once you've reached a certain threshold, the system just kills your app. So if it'll be something like you've used over 100% CPU for over 90 seconds, then they just kill you. So it's not keeping your app from heating up the CPU. It's keeping you from using a ton over a long time. So it is possible for apps to peg the CPU for shorter periods of time and keep it sustained there for a little while. And so my guess is, yes, those apps were ridiculous. They always are. Like Instagram, if you are an Instagram user, you know that is one of the heaviest battery draining apps on your phone if you ever look at the battery screen. It's like Instagram is like one of the number one things up there.
Did we talk about this? Did I admit publicly that I thought I did talk about this? I still maintain that there is no need to force quit anything. But I have now turned into, I will force quit Instagram and Facebook.
Still maintain that there's no need to force quit anything? Do you want to amend that statement?
Okay, in general usage, of course there are times that you will need to force quit things. I'm saying you don't need to do the swipe.
I think what you were meant to say was there is no need to ritualistically force quit every single application every time you're done using the phone for a
moment. Yes, that is what I meant. And the only way that I break that rule, which I do agree that is the case, I have gotten to the point, I think because I've been so scared by what I see in that battery screen that Marco just brought up, I will now force quit Instagram and Facebook if I ever look at them, because it just creeps me out how much battery they used. I bet you 100% of it is probably when I'm foregrounded, but still, it just creeps me out how much they
used to be the
battery.
Case that if you got force quit, you couldn't run in the background anymore until you were launched, but they changed that many years ago, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, well, shoot. There's a few exceptions to that.
I guess like a silent notification.
Yes. Yeah, so notification update, background refresh that used to be killed in the back. If you did that, now it's not. Because the problem is like people would force quit everything, you know, out of habit. And then they would complain, why isn't this app getting notifications?
Why is my stuff not updating?
Yeah. And so they've had to add little exceptions here and there.
Yeah. So what that means is that your habit, you know, your decision to force quit what you perceive to be a misbehaving application, that app still has the ability to misbehave not preventing it from doing background refresh, for example. And if it's doing background refresh aggressively or getting silent, notification updates from Facebook or whatever, which I'm sure it totally is, it's still back there being badly behaved.
Yeah. And if the app is in the foreground, it can do almost whatever it wants. Like a foreground app can burn the CPU for way, way longer than a background app before the system intervenes.
Although when it's doing that, like the operating system, you know, won't kill it, but it will, the CPU will throttle due to heat. Right.
Yes.
So when you're playing a game, your frame rates will drop, not because the operating system is saying you can't have this many frames, but because literally the clock speed of the CPU is being turned down. And so everything is going to get slower. And, you know, it's thermal throttling. Right.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm guessing the most likely explanation for the iPhone hot story here, most likely explanation is those parameters for when it would throttle and under what conditions were not set right or were not ideal for real world.
That's not my guess. My guess is this, and my guess is based on my wife's story of her 15 Pro. Her 15 Pro was, she said, I wish I could read her quote, but I don't have it handy here. I think what she was saying, it felt like it was too hot to touch. It was uncomfortable to have in her hand, and she's got the fine woven case on it, so it's not like she's holding the bare phone.
She has a sweater on it.
Yeah, well, you know, exactly. Here's what it says. I can't talk on the phone without it almost burning my hand from the heat. What was she doing with her phone? Talking on the phone, like voice call, like cell network voice call, not FaceTime audio, but like telephone call. So the screen's not even on. She's just talking on the telephone with her iPhone, which is madness, I know, but some people do it. And it was getting so hot.
Some people also use wired mice.
It was almost burning her hand. What that makes me think is that it is not a temperature curve thing or whatever. Here's what I think it is. These operating systems, you know, they're based on Darwin, which is underlying all of Apple stuff. It's Unix. It's got a whole bunch of different processes running. some subsystem of the operating system that has split off into a daemon process or whatever, like which is most of the parts of the operating system, had some kind of bug in it where it would get caught in an infinite loop. And it's some essential part of the system that it doesn't get killed. And if it does get killed, it immediately relaunches and it just would crash and relaunch and get caught in an infinite loop and maybe be killed by a watchdog process and relaunch and get caught in an infinite loop because some inner part of the operating system flipping out and getting caught in an infinite loop, that's not going to get killed by the operating system because it's part of the operating system. And talking on the phone, what could possibly be burning up your thing in your hand when you're talking on the phone? It's got to be some subsystem that like comes into being when you're talking on the phone or like when like this reads to me like something crashing and looping, right? Because I can't think of anything else that would explain. And that would be Apple saying, oh, something is crashing all the time, so they'll fix it or whatever. The third party apps thing, I have a harder time wondering what that could be because, you know, like Casey said, Instagram has always been like this. Like, it's not new, right? Apple has been iOS versus Facebook apps or iOS versus badly behaved apps. That war has been going on for ages. It's not mm-hmm. like, oh, we never thought we'd have to handle this. I don't think anything changed recently that would, you know. Anyway, we should skip to the end here, which is Apple does have a supposed fix for this that came out hours before we started recording, which is iOS 17.0.3. Text from Apple on this is, this update provides important bug fixes, security updates, and addresses an issue that may cause iPhone to run warmer than expected. Does it work? I don't have it installed yet. Either you install it?
I did.
I have the developer beta that has allegedly the same fix in it.
Yeah, I don't have an iPhone 15 Pro, but my wife is definitely updating her phone, and so I'll let you know how it goes for her. But yeah, talking on the phone, making it so hot that it was burning her hand. That's not good. I mean, and if this continues, if 17.0.3 doesn't fix it, I feel like that's when I start thinking of like manufacturing defect, like, you know, thermal. Is there even any thermal paste? I don't even want to know. Like, anyway, not a great start, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this is the beginnings of the studio display camera problems when Apple was like, oh, no. It's software. We're fine. It's software. And to be clear, like I have no reason to believe that it isn't software. I'm not trying to imply that Apple's full of it. But as we quickly learned with the studio display, they were full of it at that point. Like, it seems like the camera in the studio display is legitimately not great. But I suspect that this is for real a software issue. Although I will say that some friends of ours asked in a group chat with Aaron and me, asked, hey, how do you like your new phones? Ours arrive in a couple of weeks. And I said, you know, by and large, it's fine. The case story is real bad this year, but the phones are good. And Aaron said, well, you know, the phone is fine, but the battery life is no better than my 14. And I plugged it in to top it off just now, and it's basically on fire. Now, I'm pretty sure she was plugged into a MacBook Pro charger. And so presumably it was fast charging, but nonetheless, it certainly seemed that even charging her phone was making it quite toasty. So I'm curious, because she hasn't applied the update yet. I'm curious if that gets any better once she's updated.
Yeah, we need some YouTuber with access to like, you know, like one of those heat measuring things. Like, we need quantitative measurements, because as I said last week, when the thing that has something hot inside it is hot to the touch, that means the heat is going from the inside to the outside and radiating out. So like if you hold it and don't feel any heat, but it's still producing the same amount, that heat is trapped inside. So things that quote unquote feel hotter may actually be running cooler, because the thing that you want to be cool is in the middle of the phone and you want the heat to go out and then it hits your hand. And that's not great. You don't want it. Like, that's one of the reasons that people have reported that they think Apple doesn't put better, quote unquote, better cooling systems in their laptops, is because it can't get too hot on your lap. So they can't immediately dump all the heat out the back of the laptop, because it will burn your legs. So they have to let it dissipate out slowly so it never gets too hot. So I don't know the answer to the question of, is it producing more heat in the inside the phone, or is it merely better at shedding the heat that it does produce, and it's shedding it like too quickly, essentially, like that its cooling system is quote unquote too good, because as soon as the SoC heats up, it's so thermally conducted that it blasts that heat from the SoC out of the phone and it hits you and it is uncomfortable. And to be clear, that's not, you don't want that. That's not good. But I don't actually know if the quantity of heat is larger or if it's just that the transfer is faster. And I think you'd need fancy scientific equipment to figure that out.
Yeah. All right. So recently, I think this was a couple of weeks back, there was an interesting rumor about Apple making a quote unquote low cost MacBook. And I feel like we've heard about this on and off throughout the years. I was just becoming an Apple fan when the Ultrabook, I'm pretty sure that's what we called them, was a thing that would be, that was a physically small, extraordinarily underpowered computer.
No, those were netbooks.
You're talking about netbooks? That's
I'm sorry.
Ultrabook
you're right.
was
I'm sorry.
The MacBook Air clones for IPC.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. You are 100% correct. My apologies. Thank you for correcting me. So netbooks were a thing. There were these little, I mean, they were very clever and interesting, but also pieces of crap. We heard a bunch of rumors that Apple was going to make a netbook. And I think the closest we got to that was an iPad. And here we are, we're circling this thing once again. And so reading from Jason at Six Colors, Apple's reportedly developing a low-cost MacBook series to compete with Chromebook models in the education sector that could be released as early as the second half of 2024. Sources said that Apple will likely launch a new product line for its low-cost MacBooks, differentiate it from existing MacBook Air and Pro lines. The outer appearance will still use metal casing, but made of different materials. The unit price of the mechanical components will be lower, allowing for more affordable price aimed at the education market, similar to the positioning of Chromebooks.
By the way, just to clarify, Jason was not reporting this.
Sorry.
In DigiTimes, but it was like behind a paywall, and Jason quoted it. So I quoted Jason quoting it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm a mess tonight. Yeah, apparently.
Jason
Thank
actually
you,
kind of disagreed with it very well. So you should read his article that he wrote. But see, I want to talk about this because this actually it kind of piqued my interest because the idea of Apple trying to get like a radically cheaper laptop than what they have now, I think is very interesting, and there is definitely a market to that, and I find this doubly interesting because my kid just started a school where they issue every student Chromebooks, and so I now have some firsthand experience with the Chromebooks that students are getting in very large numbers across.
Welcome,
at least
both
the US.
My children have had Chromebooks for many many years now. And they've broken Chromebooks. So I have lots of experience. Get ready for Chromebooks. I mean, this is one of the things that I guess if you don't have kids in school, you might not have noticed the Chromebook revolution, but it happened. They swept through the education sector. And yeah, if your kid gets issued a computer in their school, it's probably a Chromebook.
And it goes well beyond just being issued a computer. So, and this was news to me. Like, I knew Chromebooks were making massive, inroads, not just inroads, but just massively, taken over schools and over a long time now. But I didn't realize. So my kid started the school. He's in middle school now, and they don't even. Not only do they not bring backpacks between classes, they aren't even allowed to. They just carry a Chromebook and like a small binder. There's not even like textbooks and backpacks anymore. Like that's
definitely not in my schools. That may just be a local thing.
Yeah, or maybe the textbooks are in the classroom. But regardless, like they don't carry.
Oh yeah, they don't carry
anymore.
Textbooks. The textbooks are mostly electronic. That is true.
Right, and so everything is in Google Classroom and whatever else, all those different platforms.
Does Adam's school actually use Google Classroom?
I think so. Yeah. They use, at least for some stuff, they use it. I don't know if they use it for everything, but they do use it.
There are a couple big vendors in this space and that have lots of market share. I just wondered what Google Classroom's market share is. None of my kids' schools use Google Classroom, but there's a couple other software packages that are common.
Yeah, so anyway, so what I find interesting about the idea of Apple trying to get into this market is that this market is just so utterly dominated by Chromebooks, and they are so entrenched now. So you have the massive amount of cheap hardware, first of all. And, to give some idea, I looked up, the exact Chromebook that my kid was issued by the school, and right now, just you can buy it on Amazon for $230.
And the school's not even paying that.
Right. The school's buying hundreds of them at once, so I'm sure they have a good bulk rate on that. So... But the retail price for one of them for a regular person off Amazon is $230 for an entire laptop. Now, it is a crappy laptop. The screen is dim and low resolution. The whole thing is creaky plastic and, this is not a good laptop, but it is a fully functioning asterisk laptop for $230. So when you compare that to... the M1 MacBook Air, the cheapest laptop Apple sells, the retail price for education is $900. Now, again, schools don't often pay that full price. They have discounts. Also, Apple has been discounting that exact MacBook Air through, retailers down to, the $750 range, maybe, from Amazon or Best Buy or whatever. Sometimes they'll do that. They'll dump a whole bunch out. So let's say they could actually sell the M1 MacBook Air for like around $750-$700 if they really wanted to. And that's, again, that's, you know, that's the, not the current model, it's the old model. How do you think Apple would get anywhere near $230 when they're currently at $700 or $800 minimum? And I think that's an interesting question to ask. Like, how could they get there? You know, so this rumor says, you know, it'll still use metal casing but made of different materials. Well, that, there's lots of things that could mean, yeah, you know, easier manufacturing.
It's made of aluminum foil. I mean, what is the less expensive material you can make a laptop out of that's still metal?
Well, it could have a simpler construction process. Like, instead of maybe it's not unibody, maybe there's some other assembly methods cheaper.
I agree with Jason that this DigiTimes report isn't great, but it does say made of different materials.
Yeah, it also says, like, you know, it says, quote, the unit price of the mechanical components will be lower. I mean, I guess that's like the hinge and stuff. Like, what is that even? I don't even know what that even means, but.
The Taptic engine or whatever. Here's the thing about this rumor, though, with the, you know, can Apple make a less expensive thing that can compete with the Chromebooks? As I think you'll see as you accompany Adam on his Chromebook journey, Google's real dominance is not the crappy laptops that your kids use, although it helps that those exist and are cheap. It's the web-based, cloud-based software that is behind them.
Yeah.
That is the lock-in thing. Apple has nothing that can compete with that. Apple's web-based, you know, equivalent of, like, you know, just even if it's just as simple as like Google Docs and the fact that kids have a Google Drive, setting aside actual Google Classroom or things like Schoology or all the different, you know, not so great enterprise-y education software things, all that stuff is web/cloud-based. So the purpose of the thing that your kid has is to access web/cloud-based stuff, which is why a Chromebook, which runs a web OS and all the apps are web apps, makes perfect sense. Apple has nothing on the cloud side of that that can compete. Their offerings are not compelling. They're just plain not as good, which is a, you know, usually it's like, well, Apple costs more, but they're better. Apple's education stuff is not better. They don't even have anything they can compete with, just plain old Google Docs, just text, collaborative text and a web page that kids can do stuff together. Setting aside all the other features that are way more complicated than that, Apple's like collaborative iWork stuff is miles behind plain old Google Docs, right? And so it's almost like the laptop part of it, like, doesn't even matter. And why would you pay three times the price or two times the price or heck, $10 more than the Chromebook to get a nicer way to view the same exact web apps that you can see in a Chromebook? And as slow and janky as the Chromebooks are, they're good enough to load up your kids' Google Drive and look at their Google Docs and submit things to Schoology and do all the things that the kids need to do. And there's no other stuff beyond that. Like, they don't need to run high frame rate games. The kids shouldn't be playing any games anyway. They don't run fancy software. Everything happens on the web. And yes, it is
nicer.
Kids
totally do play games on their Chromebooks. They all figure out how.
I know, but like that's not as far as the education market is concerned, they're like, our kids aren't getting high enough frame rates in their games. Like, and you could say, well, don't you want them to have the cool chemistry experiment where they're going through 3D? That stuff demos well, but practically speaking, no, schools don't want to pay even $10 more for that. So I feel like even if Apple comes out with something for $230, they're still going to be totally pushed out of the education market by Google, because what schools want is, give me a way for teachers to run classes and grade assignments and accept submissions and you know, like all the stuff, all the cloud stuff that Google and other companies do that Apple either doesn't do at all or has worse solutions for. And that is what's keeping Apple out of education, not $700 MacBook Pros or MacBook Airs or whatever.
Yeah, I think there's so many factors here. Like, I think this rumor is, first of all, I think it's unlikely to be true. But if it is true, I think the most interesting part is the hardware. Like, to us as Apple nerds, like, how do they get it meaningfully different from the current Macs? And that whole other side of the management, you know, the management of the fleet of them by school IT departments, and then how you source them, how you service them, how you repair them, what happens when a kid breaks them,
what do the kids run on them?
Yeah.
How are, you know what I mean?
How, like, you manage, like, the software, how you manage, what are they accessing? What web services and software packages?
Because what schools would want is, oh, it's a MacBook Air, but literally the only thing you can ever see on the screen is Google Chrome.
Right.
There's no switching applications. There's like a single, because that's what schools want. They don't want kids to be able to get to the Finder and install good games and play them. You know what I mean? Like, it just, like, they want it to be a Chromebook. And even with Chromebooks, as you noted, they find a way to get like Solitaire on there or find web-based games and do all sorts of like, but like the Mac operating system and MacBook Airs, like, they provide. Like, to lock them down to the degree that they would need to be locked down for school students is just so difficult. It can be done. Like, you can do managed stuff. Everything can be controlled centrally and you could stop them from running everything else or whatever. But that's so much more complicated than a Chromebook, which like comes pre-locked down in so many ways out of the box before you even begin actually locking it down, which of course you can do with Chromebooks as well. Like, the Mac is just too powerful, like, not in terms of like, you know, CPU, although it obviously is a bazillion times faster than a Chromebook, but in terms of like we always talk about the iPad, you can do so many things on the Mac. It is a general purpose computer that runs arbitrary software, right? And you have to shut off so many things before it becomes quote unquote safe for kids to use.
I do think it's interesting to think, like, you know, if they were to try to make a lower cost, like a much lower cost laptop, you know, suppose, you know, the current one's, you know, $800, $900. Suppose they wanted to hit $400 or $500. You know, that's still twice as much as Chromebooks. But suppose they actually wanted to hit $400 or $500, because I can't imagine them going lower than that. Even that would be very aggressive for them. But it's worth thinking about, like, what would that be, and what would it be so that they wouldn't lose too many MacBook Air sales to it?
That's, yeah, like, you remember the eMac? Like, this is Apple's kind of out, where it's like, oh, you can't buy this, it's education only. Because they would do that for various reasons. One, usually in the past, was back when they were actually big in schools, is they would design computers specifically for the needs of schools, and they didn't suit the needs of consumers, because they would be designed for shared environments and designed for durability, and certain features would be omitted. So it was like, this is tailor-made for you, education. And consumers wouldn't be like looking at it longingly. Even if it was cheaper, they'd be like, oh, but I don't want that one. That one doesn't have what I want, right? But in terms of what they could do to save money on this, if they made one, like, I don't know if they could do what they used to do with the eMac. If they made one that's cheaper, consumers would want it. They would say, but what about that one? Oh, no, you can't have that one. It's for education, but it looks great. I like it. It's $400. Can I just have that one? Oh, no, you know what? That's just for schools. And like, what is it about it that is schooly? And when we look at the laptops today, like, they have so little on them anymore. Like, back in the day, we were talking about all-in-one computers, that the number of features and the size and the looks and the shape and how many ports. Like, it was such, there was so much variability. But in a MacBook Air type thing, what do you think will be different about the form factor for school, other than potentially being uglier and more durable, right? There's so few ports. There's just some USB-C shaped holes, that screen, a trackpad, and a keyboard. Like, that's what the education one would be. Maybe the case would be a little bit different. But here's the thing. I think when I saw this story, I'm like, you know what? Apple can pretty easily make a much cheaper but still very good laptop that everybody would want, because it would be much cheaper. And the reason they can do that is mostly because of the Apple Silicon transition. And the way they do it is, like, if wait 2 years from now, I think 2 years from now, you could sell a plain old M1 powered laptop with a not so great screen and a not so great trackpad for $400 and still make 30% margins.
Yeah.
And an M1 3 years from now, still really good. Like, compared to what's in the Chromebook, still perfectly fine for web browsing. Still, like, just that's the Tim Cook principle. How long can we keep selling M1 based laptops? I think for a pretty long time, especially if your bar is Chromebook. And so, when does an M1 based laptop with a not so great screen and trackpad become $400? Only a few years from now, I think, with 40% margins, only a few years from now. So there is an obvious way to do that. I still don't think Apple will do it, but they could do it.
So obviously the iPad is the big elephant in this room. You know, the base model iPad is about $300, and, you know, for education, for the rest of it, it's $330. But, you know, if you buy them education, you get them for a little under $300 probably. So that's in Chromebook territory, but that's also just the iPad, you know, no case, no keyboard. You know, you'd have to, and we've seen Apple attempt to, and maybe succeed. I'm not sure. I don't know to what degree, but, you know, we've seen Apple address the educational market with the iPad, with these kind of, you know, cases they've kind of co-designed with Logitech to be like the educational case. And it's this big rubbery thing and, you know, and it has a built-in keyboard and can be used in a standardized test and stuff like that. Like, we've seen them kind of attack this market from the iPad end. And I think it's interesting that, you know, that is much closer in price to Chromebooks. You'd still be looking at about double once you throw in a keyboard and stuff, but that's at least closer. And so I wonder if the way to attack this problem, suppose they wanted to hit $400, maybe they actually start from the iPad and work their way up rather than starting from the Mac and working their way down. Now, I think
it is a closer fit, though. Like the Chromebook, yes, by the way, is and the iPad, they're closer to each other in terms of exposed capabilities. Like, it is harder to screw up an iPad, you know what I mean? And it's easier to lock an iPad down.
Yeah, and it's easier to centrally manage a whole bunch of iPads and everything. Like, there are certain clear advantages there that Apple has been selling to education. Like, it's not that the iPad doesn't sell to education. Like, they've been doing that for a long time. So we see that strategy. We see how it works. We see what it's good for and what it's not so good for. We see how it loses to Chromebooks in certain ways and how it beats Chromebooks in certain ways. But I think if you built a Mac similarly to how you would build a low-end iPad with just, you know, with a permanent keyboard and, you know, a hinge and everything, like make it a laptop shell with mostly iPad guts, I think you could hit those price ranges.
Running iPad OS?
See, I don't know. Maybe running iPad OS, maybe not. Maybe, but I think ultimately iPad OS is probably what they would do, you know, in part to avoid the cannibalization angle, and in part because it is probably better managed for this kind of purpose. So
yeah, it's a more appropriate functional surface for education, because all this different stuff that the Mac can do is not relevant to education unless you're talking about like a computer science class in high school.
Yeah, like I think ultimately the best way for Apple to even attempt to attack this problem is probably an iPad that is its own permanent laptop, like that you don't have to attach a case and keyboard to an iPad. Like, no,
you're talking about the eMate strategy. You remember the eMate? You don't remember the eMate. Yeah, did you know about the eMate retroactively?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a Newton with a permanently attached keyboard.
Yeah,
essentially made for education, thus the E.
Yeah, like that with today's iPad hardware and running iPad OS as like the main, you know, the OS for it. I think if Apple wants to actually attack Chromebooks, first of all, they're never going to replace Chromebooks because everything we mentioned a few minutes ago of like there's this whole ecosystem around them that Apple would not be able to compete with in terms of software and services.
Yeah, they basically be selling it like you can use our amazing apps and also, you know, through the web browser access the thing that runs your entire school, which is Google/Schoology/whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, they're not going to really compete well with Chromebooks, but they could at least do the Apple thing and find a high end and capture that. Like that's usually what Apple does with most of their products. You know, most of their products do not dominate their categories. Usually their products are like the high end version that takes a lot of the profit and the high end profitable shares, but it doesn't really compete with all the commodity stuff at the bottom of the market.
And to that end, like since my kids have, you know, had Chromebooks for all these years, it did take them a while, but both of them, I guess probably around sophomore year of high school, did the thing, which is like, can I not use the Chromebook, but instead use one of the fancy laptops that my parents have because they have lots of money, right? They asked, is there a laptop I can use instead of the Chromebook? For years, they didn't care, like Chromebook, whatever, school, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But eventually, and they don't, let me tell you that neither one of these kids, my kids, cares about computers at all in terms of like the hardware or whatever. But even eventually they could tell Chromebooks are, the screen doesn't look great. They're slow. Maybe they just wanted to play better games. I don't know. But either way, they asked. And so practically speaking, my daughter, who's a junior now, takes an M1 MacBook Air with her to school and does not use her Chromebook. Except on certain testing days when you have, quote unquote, have to use the Chromebook because the test is like, they, you know, it's kind of like you're only allowed to bring a certain calculator to like the,
mm-hmm. yeah, know, yep, yep,
whatever.
Yep.
That's what the Chromebooks are. That's kind of the obligatory. So she still has a Chromebook, I think. Although my school is also trying to save money and saying, if your kid doesn't need a Chromebook, like, we won't issue them one and we'll just give them one for standardized testing or whatever. But anyway, the Apple thing is like, if your parents have money, you can be one of the rich kids and not have to slum it with the Chromebook, because you'll bring your own, you know, ridiculously overspecced, expensive, fancy Apple laptop, which you use to run Chrome and access the same web pages everyone else is accessing. But, you know, the solitaire game you can play in the background during class is way nice.
Oh, my goodness.
So watch for that for Adam. How long does it take him to say, Dad, our house is filled with laptops. Do I have to use this Chromebook, or can I bring points to one of the 17 laptops in the house, that one to school with me? And then you can have a fun conversation.
No, I think the more important question is, at what point does Adam become the bullshit reason that Marco has to get a new laptop? He has to get a new laptop because, oh, Adam needs one.
I think it's already happened, because doesn't he do the thing where, like, rotating iPads down to Adam? Soon Adam's going to have phones. Like, just this is, it's
no, he rotates iPads down to me. He's the iPad power user in the house. Tiff and Adam both almost always have iPads that are better than mine. Oftentimes, I don't even have an iPad, because if something goes wrong with Adam's, I swap mine for his as I have his, you know, sent for repair or whatever. So, like, oftentimes, I just don't even have one.
Adam's got the big fancy gaming laptop, right? Or is that supposedly Tiff's? I don't remember.
We each have a fancy gaming laptop. I would describe it as big, and they aren't that fancy, but yeah, they're like, you know, the 15-inch Razer, you know, low-end GPU version.
It could be interesting. Since he already has, quote-unquote, his laptop, it'll be interesting to see if he asks you, can I bring my gaming laptop to school?
Oh, it's way too heavy and big for he wouldn't.
It's being protected by the fact that it's monstrous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the battery lasts 10 minutes.
Yeah. The Chromebook, I think it's like an 11 or 12 inch screen. You know, it's fine.
Now, let me know when he first breaks it. It's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
All right. Do we want to do any Ask ATP? Hello, future Marco. Do we want to do one, two? Do you want to say, like, I don't have an
do
after
we have
show.
A long after? I don't
have anything.
I think we should do Ask ATP, even if we just get through one or two.
All right. Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Let's do some Ask ATP. Joe Lyon asks, in a recent discussion about USB-C, one of you mentioned that in the next 10 years, the USB-C port will be the limiter in phone thickness. Maybe this wasn't jest, but it sounded serious. Is there any reason to actually think that? Apple has shown no desire, or at least no ability, to shrink thickness in the past 10 years and seem to be content at between 7 and 8 millimeters for the body of the phone. There's an image that we will put in the show notes that apparently somebody else had put together. Nevertheless, the popular assumption has always seemed to be, quote, eventually our phones will be as thin as credit cards, quote. But it is that based on anything other than sci-fi depictions of the future? Has anyone actually demonstrated R&D for future tech where battery, chips, hardware, taptic engine, other ports and switches, etc., the screen, and not to mention the camera, fit in a package of 4 millimeters or less, much less the 2 to 3 millimeters. I feel like in discussions of future phones, we often veer too far into what we think must be possible in the future just because of advances we've made in the past without considering what really are bound to be physical and practical limitations at some point.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to go massively thinner than what we have now for the foreseeable future, for a number of reasons. I mean, the biggest of which is camera optics. You know, we see as the camera plateau keeps getting larger and they keep protruding further, and now we're having to turn the optics sideways just to fit some of them in or whatever. Like, we see that is such a driving force behind phone advances and what people, not only what people get excited about and why they buy phones, but what they want out of their phones. People want their phones to be amazing cameras, and they want them to have pretty good battery life. And that's just going to result in a lot of stuff being crammed in. We already see that people want basically the biggest phone they can hold in their hands and fit in their pockets, like, you know, like width and height wise. And then they want a certain amount of thickness behind it to house a really big camera and whatever the most battery is that we can throw in there. And so there really is not a lot of market pressure to make phones thinner at the expense of battery life and camera optics. I think the idea that things must get thinner and lighter forever is in part, not entirely, but in part predicated on the assumption that we hate these things. That, like, yeah, I don't want to carry my giant, thick, heavy PC laptop with its original butterfly keyboard that folds out, Casey. I don't need to carry that. I hate my work computer. I want to leave as much of it behind as possible. And eventually, you know, you make things smaller, and people are like, oh, thank God, I can carry less of this bulky work computer that I hate. People love their phones, and they love their phones being great cameras, and they love their phones having decent battery life. And so there really is not a massive amount of demand to try to shrink them thinner and thinner and thinner. You know, people, there was that demand back, like, in the days of the Razer phones, like, you know, in the early 2000s. There was that demand because cell phones back then didn't do that much. They were much simpler devices. They didn't have any meaningful camera optics to speak of. Many of them didn't have cameras at all back then. And even when cameras did come out, they were these little surface mount things like webcams. Back then, it was like, all right, this phone is not doing much for me. I want this to be as small and light as possible because it isn't that important of a part of my life, and it's not doing that much that would justify bigger things. That's not true anymore. Today, phones are cameras, number one, and they also do a whole bunch of all this other stuff. And so I don't think anybody is really demanding, I want my phone to start disappearing out of my life and getting smaller. And no, that's not what anybody wants. People want their phones to be bigger and do more. So I don't think the market is going to go in that direction for the foreseeable future, where we're being pressured to shrink phones super thin at the expense of all those other factors that people actually care a lot about.
I don't think that's what this question was asking, though. I think it was saying, like, you know, why do we think that they'll eventually be thin? Is it just because we see that in sci-fi movies? Or, you know, there's two parts to this. One is, like, how could we possibly get there? Like, are there any advances over the horizon that, and by the way, I'll contest the idea that we said definitively that within 10 years, the USB-C port would be a limiter. I think we probably said something like, especially if I said it, it may become the limiter at some point, maybe in the next 10 years. Lots of qualifiers. But anyway, why do we think that's even a thing? Like, why? You know, again, other than seeing it in sci-fi movies, because every sci-fi movie and TV show shows somebody using something that is essentially an iPhone, but it's usually transparent, which is dumb, but, you know, sci-fi thing. But it's always thinner and lighter, right? It's basically like a piece of plexiglass that they use CG on top of or whatever, right? And that part of it, I think, is legit. And that's the reason I think that the USB-C port could become the limiter in thickness, again, assuming ports don't disappear before that, because that's, you know, obvious thing that A, ports could disappear, and B, you know, something else could replace the phone, the visual aspect of the phone, like glasses or whatever. But anyway, setting that aside, assuming those things don't thwart this idea, the reason that thinness of a phone, if possible, without compromises, we'll get to in a second, is a thing that's still worth pursuing is, Marco should know better than anybody, they feel big in your pants, man, right? You put it in your pocket, they're heavy, they're big, they're inflexible. You want that big screen, but when the Max is in your shorts pocket, it feels a little bit big, right? And if I could tell you, okay, well, you can have the iPhone Max, but it'll be half the weight and also bendable and a little bit thinner. And when you put it in your pants pocket, it would feel more like you had like a very thin paperback book in there instead of a solid, you know, fragile brick thing. You'd say, yeah, sign me up. Right. I think there is room to go within the traditional phone form factor for it to be both lighter and thinner and also more flexible. Not a piece of paper, because then you can't hold it. Right. Those are the practical considerations. Like, it can't be too thin because then it becomes uncomfortable to hold. But we could definitely go thinner than we have now, and we can definitely go lighter. Now, with current technology, do we want to go thinner and lighter? Yeah, we want to go a little bit lighter. Titanium, Marco likes that, right? But we probably don't want to go thinner because that sacrifices battery. So the next part of the question is, okay, if I agree that, yeah, the phone could be a little bit thinner and lighter and people would like it. Like, they're not begging for it, they're not dying for it, but people would like it, especially people who have long memories. Like, the Motorola Razr was less obtrusive in your pocket than any modern phone because it was just smaller. Yeah, it was way thicker. The Motorola Razr was thicker than an iPhone, but length and width-wise, I mean, it didn't have a screen. It was so tiny. Like, so in terms of how much are you aware of this item in your pockets or in your clothing or whatever, the Razr was less obtrusive than this. So given that we have to have these big screens, how do you make something this big less obtrusive? A little bit thinner, a little bit lighter, right? Are there any technologies out there that could get us there? Camera things is a big problem, right? We don't have any good technologies on the horizon for cameras, but the possibility of not having to deal with the optical stuff for the cameras. Periscope helps a little bit, although not as much as you would think. But technologies like a more advanced version of those light field cameras that have like a million different lenses on them, or whatever. If you could imagine, we've talked about this in past shows ages ago, the entire back of the phone being a giant flat light sensor of some kind using a technology. Like, imagine the entire back of the phone is like a giant CMOS sensor, not literally, but you know what I mean? That type of thing where it's just a different way to capture light than any of our current technology, like a different approach. It's not like, oh, can we make current cameras smaller, tiny little pieces of glass or plastic that focus light beams onto a little sensor? What if we took an entirely different approach to cameras? That's the only way you're going to get a breakthrough that allows us to get that thin. And you'd also need a breakthrough in battery technology, because that I think is closer. Like, we can say, okay, solid state batteries, which are always 5 years over the horizon, they have better energy density. Some of them have better energy density than current lithium ion things. You're not going to get much thinner without destroying battery life, unless everything in the phone takes up less power, which is probably not going to happen because you need to emit the photons for the screen, and there's some minimum amount of light that takes, or you have a different battery technology. So maybe, 10 years, what's the saying? Everyone overestimates what you can do in a year and underestimates what can happen in 10 years, right? 10 years, the camera problem isn't going to be solved, but in 10 years, there could be a battery breakthrough that lets our phones get 1 or 2 millimeters thinner, and then USB-C is kind of tight. If tapered phones become a thing for fashion reasons, I don't recommend this, but like, if Apple decided that they wanted to have a tapered phone and they'd say, no, we can't have a USB-C port on it, they would just go with no ports, honestly. But, you can quibble about the time horizon, but the reason I think the pursuit of thinner phones is out there in the future, if not our future, because we'll be dead, is because, they could stand to be a little bit thinner and a little bit lighter. And if they're not superseded by glasses, like, we don't have to look at this rectangle anymore because the images are just in front of our eyes, if that doesn't happen, eventually these things that we carry with us will be thinner and lighter.
All right. Chris Cast writes, do you guys ever use the MagSafe charger on your M1 or M2 MacBook Pros, or do you just use USB-C charging? I think I've used MagSafe twice in the last 18 months that I've had the computer, and both of these times were in the first week I had it. For me, I don't use MagSafe around the house. Generally speaking, my computer is plugged into the CalDigit TS4 dock, which is part of the reason why I was a little surprised that Marco doesn't have a dock, but we went through why that is already. The CalDigit provides something like 96 watts of charging. Occasionally, if I'm working on the back porch, I now, thanks to a one Marco Arment, I have a much better portable porch monitor. Well, mildly portable porch monitor than I've ever had before. And coincidentally, I don't think we talked about it on the show, but I sent Marco a picture of, or it might've been Marco and John, a picture of me using the Ultrafine 5K on the back porch with the MagSafe, thing plugged in. And Marco asked me why the hell I was doing that. And I was very confused until I remembered, the Ultrafine also provides power. So around the house, I almost never use it, but pretty much anytime I'm working from somewhere else, like the power supply cable that I use, that I keep in my laptop bag, is the MagSafe cable. So earlier today, I was at a local library. We are very lucky here that we have just truly phenomenal libraries. And I was using the MagSafe cable literally 12 hours ago. So that's what I'm doing. John, you don't believe in laptops. So Marco, what do you do?
At my desk, my desktop laptop is powered by the monitor, as mentioned, so I don't need one there. I do have a MagSafe charger, in my office for my laptops to charge. So whenever I have a laptop that needs charging that is in my office, I will plug it into the MagSafe thing, only because I have I have a bunch of outlets in here, and anyway, so I have that there. When I travel, I don't bother with MagSafe. When I travel, I just use USB-C just because I don't usually need every single one of my ports all the time when traveling. But whenever I'm somewhere, if I'm setting up like some kind of AV setup where I'm doing something with a laptop that's going to use a bunch of its ports, then I will use MagSafe because it gets me a port. It gets me an extra port, But otherwise, for the most part, I use it sometimes, but I don't use it most of the time and not when traveling, but I'm glad it's there for the times I do need it for the extra port.
I'm not a laptop person, but if I were, I would be all in on MagSafe. I have one laptop that it's not my laptop, but it is the laptop that I use. It's basically, I use it for, I boot it into Monterey to do Monterey testing. I'm keeping it on Ventura to do Ventura testing. It's kind of like a dev thing to me. It's just sitting in the same room with me. It's sitting on a desk. It never moves. It doesn't even have MagSafe because it's a 2018 MacBook Air, but it has always had a thing that I bought for it, which is one of those little like fake MagSafe USB, you shove it into the USB-C port and it's got a little magnet on it. Mm-hmm. That's how much I wanted MagSafe. I was putting it on my laptops before MagSafe even came back to them. I think the reason a lot of people end up not using it is because they don't care enough about it to buy presumably probably pretty expensive MagSafe chargers. And all around the house, what do you have? You have USB-C chargers for your USB-C devices, and none of those have MagSafe. The only thing that has MagSafe is Apple laptops. So unless you love it so much that every place you're going to bring that laptop, you're going to go out and buy another MagSafe thing, which is hard to integrate into whatever charging stuff because it's got its own brick and all that crap, people aren't going to do that. I think that's why MagSafe gets less use, because it only comes with one in the box, and you put that one somewhere, but if your laptops are portable, and if you're anywhere else with that laptop, you either have to lug the MagSafe thing for you, or you care so much that you buy them and sprinkle them throughout the house. If I was a laptop person, I would buy MagSafe things for every single position in the house, because I like the idea. I like that. I like MagSafe. I like sticking it on with a magnet. I like yanking it off. I like not worrying about if the cords are going to get caught. I give it a big thumbs up, but I don't like laptops, so it's not relevant.
I think we're, oh no, one more. Hello. Sorry, hey. Teacher Marco. I got myself twisted.
Wasn't me. Hello, this time.
Nope, it was me. Jack Mordage writes, I have always used light themes because to my eyes, they were the default in almost any app, Mac or iOS. Lately, I have found more and more apps that start with a dark theme, like Visual Studio Code, for example. And I'm wondering if maybe I'm the one that lives in the past. Are you light or dark theme users? For me, I think I too am living in the past, but much like John with his wired mouse, but I use the auto settings. So roundabouts of sundown, all of my devices switch to dark mode. And then during the day, I use light mode. But it seems like the kids these days are all in on dark mode. I don't particularly understand that personally. But as one of the three olds on this program, I will swap back and forth automatically based on time of day. I think I picked on Marco first last time. So, John, what do you do?
I mean, I think the explanation of why kids like dark theme is very easy, because it's cool, because things are dark. It's like dark, like Batman and like the Black Book.
Kids are saying.
That's absolutely why, one of the reasons why people like dark mode. The other obviously is eye strain, right? You gotta have a bunch of bright light shining in your face. I mean, it's the reason you like to go dark at night. Like, you know, it's nighttime. It's time for everything to be less lights in my face, right? So that makes sense. For me, I've said this before, the part of the revolution of the Mac, part of the thing that drew me to it so much is because in the beginning of the personal computer age, every personal computer I used was a black screen with, you know, green or amber text on it. So it was like the computer by default, it was black, it was a void. And then light up things would come, light up lines, light up text, you know, initially monochrome, right? That was how computers worked. And the Mac was the first thing to flip that. The Mac, in addition to all its artsy-fartsy proportional fonts and Mac Paint or whatever, the whole point of the Mac is, like a sheet of paper, it's white by default. And then the text, the lines, everything on it is dark. And that was like, hey, I know that from books and life, where the paper we have is white. And if you open up a book, the paper is white and the letters are black. And I can see, you know, I didn't know what a proportional font was or a serif was, but I could say this Mac screen, it looks like a book because books have dark text on a light background and books have text that looks like that too. And that was like a light switch. It was like, computers aren't just a big black void where green letters appear. Computers can do everything that you can do in the real world. It's just that you can erase as many times as you want and you never wear through the paper. So from that point on, I was 100% in on white window, dark text. And I have never looked back. Even when I got, you know, first experience like the X window system, you know, at school, and like all the default X themes for the window managers and stuff or various inverted or, you know, dark type things, changed them all to white background with black text. And that's where I am to this day. I never use dark mode for anything. Only exception is on my phone, which I'm much more apt to use, like say in a dark bed before I go to bed. And no, you're not supposed to, don't tell me about it. My Twitter apps have always been dark. And even on the Mac, Twitterific on the Mac or Ivory on the Mac, those are always in dark mode. I don't know why. Is it because Twitterific shipped by default
place
in 2000? Well, but like Twitterific, back when Twitter was great and we loved, like in 2006, 2007, whenever Twitterific came out, that was its default theme. And I am a creature of habit. And so whenever I'm doing anything Twitter-like on the Mac or on my phone, dark mode always. But everything else, light mode.
What about terminals?
Light, always. That's what I'm saying. Like when I was using X terms, right? He was like, nope, I got to change that. That's got to be black text on a white background, right? Everyone else's X terms were the reverse of that, but not me. Yeah. My terminal on the Mac, white windows, black text.
Yeah, that's funny because even in the only light mode was the only mode was light mode in macOS up until, you know, a few releases ago. And I would always make my terminals black background with white text on top of it. Anyway, Marco, what do you do?
Kind of what John does. So I have my phone auto switch, you know, with sunset or whatever, nighttime, whatever. Mm-hmm. So because, mm-hmm. you know, my phone that actually I am likely to be using my phone, you know, at night in dimly lit areas. And I appreciate that difference. The problem with dark mode on the desktop for me or on any Mac is that what I am doing on Macs is often content that is inherently going to be light. So whether it's working on, you know, like basic document stuff, like, you know, spreadsheets or whatever, or just web pages, like so many web pages assume light mode and don't even have dark mode. And yes, I know some of the ones that I'm responsible for are some of these web pages, but but anyway, so many web pages assume light mode. And to me, the kind of mixed window environment of a Mac, and not as mixed as John's maybe, but, you know, the many windowed environment of a Mac, I think it just works better with everything being light mode. And like John, I am light everywhere on the Mac. I have light terminal windows like John, which everyone else, all other programmers besides me and John, think this is like blasphemy. You have white background with black text in your terminal windows. What?
Still the default in Apple Terminal, I believe. You get a box stock Apple Terminal, you launch it. I think Xcode asks you now, do you want light or dark theme? But Terminal does not. Terminal defaults to white windows with black text, I think.
Yeah, all of my editors, everything I do in the Mac is light background. You know, all the different, every app that has an option for dark mode, I don't use it. Like on the Mac, it is all light. It's blindingly bright. I run the XDR at its full brightness all of the time. Like this,
that's a lot. I don't think I do that. Let me see what level I'm on. Hang on.
while John's
I'm not even at 50%. Yeesh.
It is 10 p.m. It's dark outside, and I'm at full brightness.
Oh, that's too much. That's too much. I mean, I am in a dimly lit room, but yet I don't crank it up that much. I think I do have the auto. Do you have the auto brightness thing on your XDR?
No, I turn that off.
I do.
In all fairness, I do keep my office very well lit. Like the room in is pretty brightly lit most of the time. During the day, it's very brightly lit, and then, you know, at night I keep it, you know, medium brightness.
I can't believe you keep it, because maximum brightness for non-HDR mode, I believe, is like 600 nits for the XDR.
500, but it isn't that ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, I was on my wife's studio display. I think that one is 600 at max, and the reason I notice it is because her window, at a certain time in the morning, the sun comes through like the slats in the shade and directly hits the light sensor in her studio display. And so if you're sitting using your computer, all of a sudden the screen goes room and goes to maximum 600 nits. You're like, oh my God, why is this happening? And you're like, oh, the sun. Right? Because you can see this tiny speck of sun lands just on the light sensor. I do like the audio adjusting, because that's the other aspect of like a lot of people use dark mode. They complain when like a white window appears because it blows their, you know, eyeballs out, right? If you're, you know, if your pupils dilate because it's like everything is dim and then one white window appears, it can ruin your day. Whereas I feel like I'm protected from that by being in light mode all the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything, like my pupils are more constricted because, I mean, granted, I have it on half brightness, but like they never really dilate to the point where one white window is going to pop. So a black window pops up on my screen does not hurt my eyeball. So that's just what I'm more comfortable with. I know a lot of people use light mode and dark mode depending on, because it is actually a comfort and accessibility issue. For me, I think it's mostly just preference, but I do notice the few times I've actually tried like legit dark mode, even on my phone or my iPad, you know, I recognize people's complaint. You try to be in dark mode and then you load one of Marco's websites that he didn't do dark mode for. And you're like, oh, I can't see anything. And that never happens in light mode.
Yeah. And that also never happens on iPhones nearly as often. Like, on the iPhone, you are mostly in different apps, not so much in the web browser. And you're running one thing at a time full screen. So like, I feel like it's easier on the iPhone to maintain darkness when you're in dark mode.
Yeah, and the bigger, I found the bigger, not that I have a lot of experience with this, but my short experience is the bigger and more important the website is, less likely they are to support dark mode. So my dinky blog that I post on twice a year supports dark mode. Does Amazon.com? I seriously doubt it, although I'm sure we'll find out as soon as I say these words.
For what it's worth,
Casey can check. Please check, Casey.
Sure. Well,
because you're in dark mode right now.
Well, but the thing is that I was just about to say I use an app called Noir, N-O-I-R, that that does a really good best guess at what a dark mode style sheet would look like for websites that don't have their own dark mode. And so my Amazon looks like it supports dark mode, but based on what I'm seeing from Noir, it's Noir doing it. It's
no,
not
it absolutely
Amazon
does not.
Doing
I just turned on dark mode and these products are all on a white background.
Exactly. So Noir, we'll put a link in the show notes. I think I got this from Gruber potentially years ago, but it's very, very good. It works on iOS, iPad OS. I don't remember if it's different purchases or universal, but one way or another, it works on all the major Apple platforms that have web browsers. So I definitely recommend it. It's the only way that I can use dark mode and ever open Safari, because otherwise it's a nightmare.
Thanks to our sponsors this week, Green Chef, Trade Coffee, and Squarespace. And thanks to our members who support us directly. You can join us at atp.fm/join, and we will talk to you next week.
Does anyone have an after show?
I think you two should reproduce the window dragon bug in the after show.
No. Absolutely yes. not.
While I'm running yes. the broadcast?
Yeah, no, absolutely
no.
not.
Yes. No, like absolutely I said, like not. That's you shouldn't be afraid of it, because it is not a thing that overloads your system. Like, it's not a load-based thing.
I don't can I switch users and trust?
No, you don't you don't need to switch users. You can do it with single users, it's just harder.
No, I'm not opening 150 windows like you do, John. I'm
sure, it'll be
that.
Super fun.
I have too much empathy for the machine,
this,
John.
This is like,
well, that's what I'm saying. It's not gonna hurt the machine. The machine does not care about the windows.
Mm-hmm. I
mean, at a certain point, the backing stores are going to use lots of RAM. But anyway, you've got plenty of RAM.
It'll hurt my soul. I'm not going.
Exactly.
I'm not going to do this during a broadcast when I have a live recording.
Oh,
running.
You're so afraid. I mean, you can stop the recording and commit the file to disk and start a new recording.
No,
wow.
Then you're going to mess up my sync operation later. No, I don't.
What are we looking to establish? Like, I don't doubt. That
I just want you to feel it. I just want you to experience it.
Phrasing. Okay, so how would I go about doing this without adding any other users?
Oh,
you would open
God,
text
don't edit. Mess up the recording, please.
Okay, Casey, mess up a recording? What are you talking about? You've got so many backups, he's fine.
Yeah, that's never happened. The hardware recorder's running. All right, so what do I do? Just mash on Command-N 1,000 times?
You just open up TextEdit, and then, well, first of all, when you open up TextEdit, this is an interesting thing. When you open TextEdit, does it open any windows, or do you get the open save dialog?
No,
box?
I get the open save dialog.
Okay, well, just hit cancel, and then you're just going to hold down Command-N, sir, and what you're going to see is a line of windows that say Untitled 1, Untitled 2, Untitled 3, yeah. So you'll know exactly how many you open. So maybe stop around 50 first.
Oh, I already went to 70. Sorry. All right. So now I just drag around.
Just grab one of those windows and move it around. How's it feeling for you?
Totally fine.
Okay.
And by the way, I have two 5K monitors and my laptop screen all open right now.
None of that matters.
I'm just
Do you have
sure all...
third-party RAM installed?
No, this is a laptop.
I did hardware diagnostics. When I was doing the hardware thing, I ran the hardware diagnostic on my Mac Pro. Like when I was thinking it's got to be hardware. Everything has had such a spring clean. Okay, go to 150.
All right, 80, 90. 100.
Look how fast it opens them. It's nothing. It's nothing to your computer.
20, 130, 140, 150. God, I hate this. 152. I stopped a little too soon. It's still fine. It's
totally fine. I think 152. You should be able to perceive something. Give it a real good. Here's the thing. Trackpads do a little bit of smoothing. They may be messing you up, but take a look at where the cursor is in the title bar. Click somewhere and see.
Oh,
if
yeah.
It,
okay. I'm losing. I'm migrating off of the title bar over time, but
all right,
this is the response rate is so good.
Yeah, if you were to log into a second user now, it would be fully on, right? But I know you can't do that, so go to 300.
No, I'll stop at 200 first.
Oh, this is like driving on the gas when the gas tank is on E to see how far you can go. Gotta keep going, Casey.
All right, well, let's see, 109. Okay, 200. All right, here we go. I'm going to put my cursor over the U. This would have been much better with a visual aid, but here we are. All right, here we go.
This is the worst podcast.
I'm definitely getting some some significant migration from the pointer.
The jumpiness is what you'll probably start to notice first, because
I don't notice really any jumpiness. It's just I notice that where I put my cursor, so I put the mouse cursor inside the U.
Yeah.
Inside the U and Untitled, and it doesn't take a lot of squiggling about before it moves.
Stop your recording, switch to a different account, and come back.
I'm not doing that.
That's why next week I'll have to have you guys log into a second account before we begin recording, because you'd be fully into it at this point with a second user logged in.
I don't know. My computer isn't a piece of shit, and it seems to be just fine.
No, you. Like I said, the second user is not like it. It is not just like a multiplying factor.
All right,
like
here we go, baby. 250. Let's keep going. All right, 210, 220. Nuts. 230.
Now, I don't know when it will stop you. I've never done more than 300.
Windows are opening awfully slowly. I will say that. Oh, I overshot. I went to 251.
It also makes you kind of wish the animation wasn't there. Like, how much time is it spending just doing the animation, slowing down?
I
mean,
again, it's still... I'm not debating. I'm not trying to say that you're wrong or a liar or anything like that. Again, my cursor sucks. My cursor's definitely migrating, including off of the title bar from time to time. But... in terms of jumpiness or whatever.
Yeah. So when you're done with the recording, log into a second user, log back to this one, grab one of those windows. You will see a big difference.
I will not, sir. I'm stopping at 300 in just a second.
Yeah, just leave them there.
No, I'm not. 290.
You should go on Activity Monitor to see how much RAM TextEdit is using now.
Oh, I way overshot because I hit the end button way too many times. All right, hold on. Activity Monitor. If my computer doesn't die and if this recording is actually good, I will be very surprised.
Yeah, please don't ruin the recording. I don't want to have to deal with a weird resyncing. Like,
all right,
God.
Let's see. Memory. Let's see. TextEdit is using less than a gigabyte of memory.
Look at that. And sort by CPU now. How much CPU is TextEdit using?
Percent CPU. 16.9. There were several other things that were using more. So, all right, anyway, let me start dragging some windows. No, it's fine, John. It's fine.
All right, leave him there. Go log into a second account.
No, I will not. Okay.
We're not doing that
when you're done with the recording.
I'm not doing that. I don't even have another account on this machine.
You don't have another account?
No.
That's not that good.
Hold on, are you doing?
That cursor is definitely migrating way off the title bar now. However,
how far can you get it off the title bar? Can you get it like 3 inches off?
I am not your monkey. I'm not doing stupid pet tricks.
How high can
you
get, man?
Right? All right. I'm quitting TextEdit at 309 windows. This is just...
Oh, no. You should have closed the windows. What are you doing?
That when you relaunch TextEdit?
Command option W.
Are they going to all reopen?
Yes.
Wait. How do I... What command option W? All right.
Command option W before you quit. Okay. So you'll thank me.
Oh, my gosh.
The fun thing is when you launch TextEdit and it has 300 windows open, you see all the shadows appear first and then the windows pop in. It's really weird.
All right, I think I have successfully cleaned everything up. Thank you, sir. That would have been very bad. And
what
I would
say, like, that stressed you out, but
some
it,
random document. And that's what
that
happened.
Stressed you out, but it did not stress your computer. Your computer could handle it just fine.
Yeah, because I don't have a piece of garbage. That's it. Or
Marco with his mighty computer wouldn't even try it.
No. Not while I'm recording a podcast with that said mighty computer.
I'm saying
no.
It's not going to stress anything.
So the question is, do I have enough confidence in my superior to your $17,000 computer laptop? This actually, can we not agree, Marco, that this is yet more proof that laptops are superior to desktops?
I don't think that's
relevant at all.
I'm pretty
sure. If I have that M2 Ultra Mac Pro.
In any case.
Or a Mac Studio.
The question is, should I pull the Wave WAV, whatever it's called, off of the Mix Pre 3 and send it to Marco in addition to the MP3 that
I mean,
I'm recording.
You have your little iStat menus running the whole time. Did you see any CPU spiking when you're opening Windows?
The only iStat menu thing that I have visible in the menu bar is current throughput, like bandwidth on the network card.
Oh,
I can get to the other ones by clicking that because it has sub menus for CPU and memory and so on. But I did not have that open.
Menu bar, since I updated to Cinema very recently, do either one of you, and I haven't looked into the other, do either one of you know how to get rid of that stupid orange microphone from the menu bar?
I do not, but I'm looking at it.
No, it's just always there for me. I just accept that.
It's good. There's got to be a way. I do not like it. Like, it's Apple. I know why they made it orange, because it's like, oh, I want you to know that the microphone is on, kind of like the green dot on the camera. Like, I get it, but Apple pushed so hard for the monochrome icons in the menu bar, and then they go and do that. Ugh, I don't like it. And no, command dragging it off doesn't work.
They're like a lot of people are like really particular about, like, I have to have the perfect looking menu bar at all times. I've just never cared that much. Like, it's fine. I throw crap.
I didn't used to care until Apple forced everything to go monochrome. So now color ones stand out. When they were all color, it's like, fine. I just wanted to look good. But once they went all monochrome, now anybody does a color one and it just it's messing it up.
Oh, I still keep. I got Fantastical's color icon. I got my Fantastical
one looks good.
Like,
you don't have Dropbox, but Dropbox I changed to black and white ages ago. It used to be the sole remaining color one was when Dropbox was like that bluish mess.
All right, I think we're done.
Yep.
Pedals.
I mean, now Dropbox is just a mess of different ways. They're a technical mess. Can
you
mess,
believe
but
this is
nicer.
This is boggling my mind, but like, so you know, Dropbox has had like the file provider based one that everybody hates because it doesn't work well because Apple's API sucks. You know that one?
Yep.
Right. Dropbox has been trying to get me to upgrade to that for, it's got to be a year now. I'm like, I cannot believe it has not forced me to update. Like every other app is like, oops, you looked at me wrong. I force updated it in the background, but Dropbox just, it's just never going to update. Like I was like, maybe the old version won't run in Sonoma, but no, it's still up there. And I see it every once in a while saying, hey, you want to update to the file provider one? And I go, nope, I never will. But it hasn't forced me. Do you believe that?
I genuinely don't understand why neither of you use Synology Drive to do this.
Dropbox stops working, maybe I will. But like,
you really should. My life.
The non-file provider version of Dropbox with all the crap disabled on it is actually pretty benign. And like I said, I don't run it all the time. It's not running right now.
You have empathy for your computer in that regard.
No, you know, you know why? Because Dropbox has the drinks from the FS events fire hose, and it does slow down any kind of file operation. So when Dropbox is running, Time Machine runs slower because Time Machine is trying to access the disk and doing all sorts of crap. And every single one of those events being processed by DBFS event, whatever thing in Dropbox. So Dropbox, you should not run all the time if you can help it.
All right, titles. I suggested, and I really like A Very Eventful Day. It only has one vote, though, so I might be the only one.
Where is that one?
One vote.
Is that for the mouse events? Was that
it was the mouse.
That was eventful day on Mastodon.
Oh, just like on solving the... Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Let me see what else is in here. Fine woven case hole.
What was a gradient of badness?
How many windows you open. Like, it's not like the bug doesn't happen and then does happen. It's just, it's slowly happening more and more.
I can do that one too. I still prefer A Very Eventful Day, but I can.
Yeah, I like A Very Eventful Day.
I like A Depressing Series of Experiments.
That's also very good. I like that.
Let's see.
I Do Hide Most of the Time, Taken Out of Context is also pretty good.
That's pretty good. I like that.
That might even be my favorite now.
Which one is that? How many votes?
Number four, or one of the fours. I Do Hide Most of the Time. Now it's five votes.
Yeah, that's not
I think because it has the double meaning, I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
What is it about it is school? I didn't think I said that. Well, maybe I did. Schoolie. Yeah, Schoology. What a terrible product name. What a terrible product. I hope you never have to use it, but you probably will.
I haven't seen that float by
yet.
We
definitely use it here.
Schoology,
it is the thing.
Talk about fluck up, right? Schoology, like they had a meeting, like we have to name our product, like we're gonna call it something. What do you think? It's a school thing. Schoology, Schoology. Yeah, let's go with that.
It's a school thing, and it makes you wish for death and somebody to write a eulogy. So Schoology.
There you go.
There you go.
That makes sense.
Right. I think I like A Very Eventful Day because of the double meaning of event. Everyone is still obsessed with the idea, like, it's because the second user is getting your mouse events or whatever, which is why I was so happy when I could finally say, no, it's reproducible with one user. It's just way harder. Like, to just, not that it eliminates the second user, but it's like, it's not, you know, so everyone would just like, log the events that the second user is seeing. Does the second user have any windows open? Or it's like, forget about the second user. Don't worry about the second user. Doing nothing.
A Very Eventful Day. Is that the winner marker?
Yeah, I like it.
You good?
Yeah, I can do that.
All right. Oh, wait, what the hell was our post show? Oh, Casey performs an experiment. I can't spell experiment.
Brave Casey holds down command N for 15
bravely
seconds.
Bravely performs an
He bravely
experiment.
Ran away.
Peaking. All right. Good to go. All right. Anything else for live people?
Cool. No, I think that's it. All right. Thanks, live people. Team. This was fun. And we will talk to you next week, I think.
Normal time. Yeah, normal time.
Yeah, go to try next week. Cool. All right.
Oh, wait. No, I'm in the wrong month. Yeah, okay. Normal time.
Yeah. All right. Bye, live people.
Bye, live people.